What really matters. So tell a friend and stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick.
I'm very concerned about the timing of this.
The Bush administration offering up what it says is proof of North Korean and Syrian nuclear ambitions, but the allegations are raising some questions. Correspondent Dan Raviv begins our reports.
A CIA narrator, without naming Israel, says the reactor building was destroyed by an air raid last September. We see a clear satellite photo of the damage, then evidence Syria buried the debris.
These actions are inconsistent with peaceful nuclear intentions.
Syria's ambassador here says this is all bogus, like the U.S. intelligence presentation before invading Iraq that claimed Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. There are complex diplomatic reasons the administration finally broke its silence about last year's Israeli bombing of a Syrian nuclear plant. But members of Congress are angry they were kept in the dark. Republican Pete Hoekstra says they should have been briefed months ago.
A trusting environment between the administration and Congress does not exist.
He says the intelligence committees were being used by the Bush administration instead of being kept informed as the law requires.
Gas prices are higher at a new record today. The average nationwide, $3.55 a gallon. Major airlines are complaining about high jet fuel prices, but as CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes reports, you'll likely pay.
The airlines are looking for every way they can to make back that money, and that means charging fees on everything from booking a flight over the phone to even just getting a few inches of extra leg room. Even the airlines that have already been charging for these things are charging more this summer.
There's a big cleanup in west and north Texas after a severe thunderstorm swept through. Several tornadoes were sighted.
It knocked the wall down, and it looks like you can see a path where it went.
KRLD's Matt Thomas has more.
One street here in Crowley completely ripped apart. Four of the houses that I'm looking at right now, the roofs are partially gone. One of the houses, half of it is completely gone. Authorities have roped off the area. They're just now letting the homeowners back in to see what they have left, and in many cases, it's not a whole lot.
The online dealer who sold one of the guns used in the Virginia Tech massacre will visit the school tonight. Eric Thompson says he wants to help support a campaign in favor of concealed weapons on college campuses.
These are terrible tragedies, and I think that if people want to have the right to protect themselves, there shouldn't be policies in place that actually end up harming people more than saving them.
Millions of Americans have had the procedure, but some patients complain they've had complications following LASIK surgery. Dean Cantus says his vision was damaged.
Now everything is slightly doubled to the right. I see three moons at night.
LASIK has given millions of patients 20/20 vision, but the FDA will hold hearings tomorrow into the complaints. A Florida judge has sentenced Wesley Snipes to 3 years behind bars for failing to pay taxes. He will pay a $5 million fine. On Wall Street, the Dow finished up 85. This is CBS News.
I want a healthcare company that helps me stay healthy.
Staying healthy matters. That's why Aetna believes in the power of preventive care. We offer plans that cover a range of preventive services from annual checkups to well baby visits at no cost to our members.
It's like they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
We want you to know. Aetna. To learn more, go to Aetna.com.
Plans offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company. Health insurance plans contain exclusions and limitations.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. Only at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From April 24th through the 28th, save up to 25% on exceptional paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams for painting, decorating, and great savings.
At Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Officials in Texas now say 25 of the mothers taken from a polygamous compound are believed to be minors. Girls are now in state custody. The increasing violence in Chicago will lead to a high-level meeting tomorrow, as Craig Delamore of WBBM reports.
Mayor Richard Daley has been troubled by some 40 shootings in Chicago in less than a week. About a dozen people have died, including five found shot to death in a South Side home. He's looking for answers, and he told the Associated Press he's calling about two dozen officials from religious groups, the schools, police, and social service agencies to his office. This is planned as a private meeting, and the mayor wants to discuss the reasons behind the violence and ways to stop it.
The Brazilian Air Force has suspended its search for a priest who vanished after sailing off attached to 1,000 balloons. He went missing on Sunday. And those two pilots for Go Airlines who overshot a runway recently in Hawaii and were believed to have fallen asleep have now been fired. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your GPS.
Turn right at Elm Street.
No, I'm pretty sure I go straight.
Turn right at Elm Street.
I don't want to turn right. I'm going to my Ford Lincoln Mercury dealer for service, and it's up ahead on the left.
Passing Elm. Oh. Make U-turn.
Look, GPS.
Don't take that tone with me.
Excuse me?
Do you have something against Elm Street?
No, I just...
Allergies, maybe.
No.
Old girlfriend lived there.
No, it has nothing to do with...
It's a perfectly fine street with lots of...
Elm trees. Yeah, I get it. Look, my dealer knows what my car needs, like a set of tires or maybe a new GPS system.
That was uncalled for.
If you need tires, wheels, or other accessories, use the Genuine Service credit card, and you can buy now and pay later. Ask about the card at your dealership.
Well, we're in, we're out, and we're on our way. Where to now?
I hear Elm is nice.
I've heard that, too.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service, only at your dealership. Come in, keep going. See participating dealership for details through 531-08.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Greetings in any available language. I'm glad you're with us. We only have 3 hours to take on the biggest issues of the day.
To walk on this earth.
And we're going to do what we can.
I'm made of this earth. I'm born of this earth. I breathe of this earth. And even with the pain, I believe in this earth. So I wake up every morning and I'm stepping on the floor. I wake up every morning and I'm stepping out the door. I got faith in the sky. Faith in the one. Faith in the people rocking underneath the sun. Because every bit of land is a holy land. And every drop of water.
On our program today, Faz Shakir will join us in just a moment. We're going to talk news from Washington, D.C. He's at the Center for American Progress. Later this hour, Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer return to our program. Their book is called True Patriot. They try to redefine patriotism to include us progressives. And we're going to talk about the sticking point in Pennsylvania that prevented Obama from closing the sale because he won't wear an American flag lapel pin.
Hello, 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 hello.
Next hour, Scott Dick returns to our program, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. We'll talk about the promotions for Petraeus and General Odierno. Something like that. His first name's Ray. And also the tragic news that we touched on earlier this week, that an average of 18 veterans commit suicide every day, and that number is top-heavy with Iraq and Afghanistan vets. We'll also check in with Scott on Hillary Clinton's recent denunciations of Iran and her invocation of Cold War rhetoric.
Bounce to the rhythm, shake to the rhythm, and you roar to the rhythm.
Good news for our listeners along the Central Coast and those north in the Bay Area who've been concerned about the prospect of aerial spraying for the light brown apple moth. A judge has stopped the spraying in Santa Cruz County. We'll get the lowdown from Steve Scholl Buchwald of the Pesticide Action Network as we kick off the Free Speech Zone about 2 hours away.
Giving you a beat you can rock and roll to.
At any time, you can call into the program. It's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And my email is on. It's working. You can send me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or should you take exception to a comment from Mr. Collins, try full of it at PeterBCollins.com or BigMouth@PeterBCollins.com. It'll get to me. Maybe even a little faster than the other way. Faz Shakir is Research Director at the Center for American Progress, and he does a lot of duty there. Co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. You can get that free in your email. Just log on to progressreport.org. And he also presides over the blog and action updates at thinkprogress.org. Faz, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Peter?
Well, there's a whole lot going on.
Yeah.
Just a whole lot. It's hard to keep track of everything and prioritize it properly. Let me start off with the breaking news about torture policy. And does Dana Perino regret calling on good old-timer Helen Thomas in the news conference today?
No, I don't think she does. I mean, you know, she didn't answer the question. Dana Perino didn't answer the question that she obfuscated. But I think what we've all been proud of is the fact that Helen Thomas broke the 14-day silence of the press corps on the ABC torture story. And
yeah.
He was the first to ask the question. She pressed it to Perino, and Perino gave a response saying, oh, we don't torture. As evidence, look at General Hayden's testimony in the Hill, who, of course, was the one who acknowledged that there was waterboarding.
Oh, but just a little, and it was a long time ago, and we're not doing it no more.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you get into torture with the White House, and it is torture. It's torture listening to them and trying to explain how they went about this. You know, on a related note, I was listening to Doug Feith today, and he said, I was the most pro-Geneva Convention person around at the Pentagon. I mean, this is the guy who, of course, ditched the Geneva Convention. So there's a lot of tortured logic.
And do they think we're really stupid? I mean, this seems to be a two-barrel message. One is designed for international consumption, which is America tortures, so watch out. And the other is designed for domestic consumption, which is we don't torture, don't even think about it.
And the other is, I think those two are right. And then the third, I would say, is the legal concern. I think that's starting to actually creep into a lot of people's heads,
mm-hmm.
Particularly as you bring in a new attorney general and, you get a changeover in administration, and now a lot you look into the documents of who knew what and what they authorized and whether it was constitutional or not, and there starts to become a good legal case against the people who authorized torture. And I think they actually are concerned about that and are trying to stake the ground that, no, this isn't what we wanted, this isn't what we intended, this mm-hmm. is what some couple of bad apples did.
And that is coming from CIA officials and the director of the FBI, Robert Mueller. They both have expressed at different times, we're now learning about some of the documents that have surfaced under the Freedom of Information Act, but what we're seeing is that from day one, pardon the expression, of the, you know, reinvigoration of interrogation and the incredible efforts to redefine torture so we could do it, the real stalwarts, the people who I think are long-termers and not just political hacks, at both the agency and the FBI recognize their own potential vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and we saw this play out, remember, with the warrantless wiretapping, and for many years we didn't know exactly how that was authorized, and then shocking details arose about bedside visits in the middle of the night by, you know, trying to get John Ashcroft to sign on papers because there was so much dissension. And the same now is true for torture, that there was a lot of dissension within the administration about authorizing these torture memos, and thankfully there were people who spoke up at the time. Of course, they were marginalized. That's what the Bush administration does, and then their dissent was stifled. But thankfully, it's starting to come out, and it builds the case for, I think, the administration's record, and hopefully we learn some lessons about never doing this again.
Yeah. And, Faz, I want to come back to the media track here for a second. As you pointed out, it's been 14 days since ABC broke this story. I was bitterly disappointed that Charles Gibson, who anchored the original reports, didn't have the presence of mind to even reference it in the final debate there in Pennsylvania. And you would think that only out of self-promotion, or if only out of self-promotion instincts, that ABC's White House reporters would have been peppering Perino and others with questions ever since their story broke. Why is ABC standing down on their own exclusive report?
You know, I'm scratching my head over exactly the same question. Their chief White House correspondent over there is a woman named Martha Raddatz. She's done great reporting. She's generally there at the briefings. She's had many opportunities to ask questions. I don't know why they haven't. She, in fact, had an interview with President Bush where she asked him about this, and that's how we learned that he had authorized the memos. He said he knew about what was going on in the principal's meeting. He had approved everything that they were doing. So she was the one who actually broke that news. But then the story just kind of ended there. And it's an interesting dynamic about here. What goes on in the mind or the heads of the press corps? Why don't they think this is a serious issue? I think that's something that we could probably spend quite a bit of time talking about. But it's like, it's one of these things that, well, it just confirms what all of us already knew. So therefore, let's just throw it away and move on to something else that's interesting about some political bickering on the trail today. You know, I don't know why the press corps thinks like it does, but it's so clear that they all think alike, and in their minds, torture wasn't a big issue to them.
Well, the rationale you just offered suggests that they buy into the administration's point of view.
Yeah, I think that, well, I think they get deluded. I don't think they initially walk in the White House and say, oh, I agree with the administration, but over the course of a few briefings, they begin drinking the Kool-Aid, and of course they're threatened with access if they don't report as the administration would like them to. So those kinds of things wear them down, and after a while they're like, well, this is not a battle I really want to engage in. I'll save my bullets for some other issue.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Faz, I saw your colleague Lawrence Larry Korb on the NewsHour last night. He did a great job. And I'm just a little disappointed because I actually thought Bush might appoint him CENTCOM commander.
We wish. Maybe it'll be up to the next president, Obama or Hillary, to do that. But
now, I'm not really surprised that Petraeus got the nod, and this seems to be part of a very carefully orchestrated plan. And on the one hand, I have to concede that they have played this very deftly, buying additional Freedman units at no charge. And now the Congress is ready to roll up the appropriations into one blockbuster, maybe $170 billion just to get the stinker out of the way. And it really is frustrating to me, Faz, that the administration has its way with us on a routine basis.
Yeah.
And we're never going to really hear why Admiral Fallon had to go.
That's right, yeah. You'll never hear that. And the other thing is the hero worship of General Petraeus in the administration that has pervaded now the country, it seems, I think has been deleterious and bad for the country, because fewer people want to disagree with the Petraeus plan for Iraq. And now, as he moves up the chain and continues to put in place a plan that says that we're never going to leave Iraq, the senators on the Hill and the congressmen on the Hill are not going to step up and ask the tough questions, because we've seen before when they have had an opportunity to confront Petraeus that they haven't really taken that opportunity. And so, it's amazing how one man, General Petraeus, has moved the debate in such a drastic way.
And he'll have to be confirmed by the Senate, but that's hardly in doubt.
No, hardly in doubt. That's right.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen them put up much resistance.
It'll be a formality, and certainly Senator Levin and the rest of the crew will have wonderful things to say about him.
Yeah. Well, and of course, this is a promotion that lasts until the next president takes office in January.
Yes, correct.
And so it could be a very short tour of duty at CENTCOM for Mr. Petraeus. But
I think... Well, the one key question that General Petraeus has to answer is, are we safer because of the Iraq War? He couldn't answer it before. He has to answer it now.
Well, that'll be interesting. He'll find a way to dodge it and say, oh, Crocker, what he said. We're going to take a break and return with Faz Shakir. We'll talk about that clean coal and about John McCain and earmarks straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery Deli and Cafe, open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Slow down, you move too fast.
This is Professor Mossberg, your host here at KRXA for the Poetry Slowdown. T.S. Eliot said, April is the cruelest month. What is cruel about April? Think about it for yourself. Call me on the show or write me at Barbara@KRXA540.com. We want to know your ideas for Cruel April. Sundays, right here on KRXA at high noon.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there. And who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
AllEachMoney.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong. Everybody,
AllEachMoney.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong.
AllEachMoney.com.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show, 22 minutes after the hour. I'm glad you're listening. And a shout-out to our listeners in Seattle, Washington, now getting a double dose of the Peter B. Collins Show on weekends on AM 1090 KPTK, Saturday and Sunday nights. We continue with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. Log on to thinkprogress.org. And Faz, I wanted to get your take here on John McCain's recent attacks on earmarks. And we understand that this is a kind of underhanded way that senators and congresspeople insert budget items into a bill, and voila, a project can get funded in their district. They look good because they brought home the pork. And it has spun out of control. There's no question about it.
But when John McCain lectures the Democrats on earmarks, I feel that he's on real swampland, real shaky ground, because the Republicans have really ridden the earmark bus in incredible ways over the last 7 years. And I would think every time he talks about it, Ted Stevens, you know, pokes him in the rib, saying, "That's my bridge to nowhere. Don't you ever try to take it away from me." But McCain has stumbled on this issue as he tries to propel himself as Mr. Clean, but as he talks about cutting out earmarks, we discussed this a week or two ago, it might cut funding for Israel, which is an unintended consequence of the senator's sweeping remarks.
Yeah, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly about earmarks. The good is things like funding, foreign aid, military housing. Those are earmarked items, mostly because Congress has a terrible process about which it, through which it goes to get these things authorized. That said, those are earmarks, and those are some of the good ones. There's the bad ones that are the bridge to nowhere, and then there's the ugly ones that are lead to indictments for congressmen, right? We've seen that in Bob Ney and Duke Cunningham and a whole host of others. John McCain's take on this is so substanceless, and it actually mirrors his response to a lot of different issues, which is generally the bluster, the most strident tone that he can possibly take on an issue that sounds good to the American public. So, for instance, on earmarks, he says, "I would abolish all earmarks. I would never authorize any of them." Well, it sounds great, but you know, once you break it down into actual funding programs that he would cut, he can't name any, and he keeps backing away from everyone that we put in front of him. It just shows that he hasn't really done the homework. He hasn't thought through these issues, and we've seen this on a lot of different issues, right, like Al-Qaeda in Iran, right, or what are the details of his health care plan. About economy, I don't know anything about the economy. He shows it over and over again. Torture, he's back and forth on. John Hagee, he's for him, he's against him. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole variety of issues that he just doesn't do the homework on. He just full of bluster on.
Yeah, and Mr. Clean got dinged by the New York Times earlier this week, a story that affects our listeners in the Monterey, Santa Cruz area. A guy named Donald Diamond, a longtime friend who helped McCain get started in politics way back in the 80s, made $20 million on a land deal related to the decommissioning of Fort Ord on the Monterey Peninsula. And I give the Times credit for digging up a great story. So far, it appears it was a one-day story.
Yeah, well, that's the case with John McCain. I mean, the big story here is that as I look forward into the general election, I don't see this contest being Democrat versus John McCain. I see this as John McCain versus the National Press Corps, you know, because the press corps is his base. Those are his key allies. And if they continue to shield him from bad stories, as they've done frequently, I mean, sometimes they'll float a couple bad stories, but then have absolutely no follow-up and not let it go anywhere. Those are the types of acts from the press corps that will save the McCain campaign. And there's so much out there that could use critical reporting. And I think that, you know, I just hope that it's done. And I'm crossing my fingers, and we're doing our part to try to inform them, but ultimately it will rest on their shoulders.
Faz Shakir, lead story on the Progress Report today is all about the coal industry. New York Times reporting that Europe is flirting with more coal plants despite the contribution to global warming. And we've got a big struggle in this country, too, because we've got a lot of coal under the ground and a lot of polluting electrical power plants that they claim they're going to clean them up and everything's going to be better. But I'm uncomfortable with our flirtation at this particular time.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about our planet in peril and whether people understand the acts that need to be taken in order to save the planet. I think coal clearly is one of the biggest issues. It's the dirtiest fuel out there. America has more of it than any other country in the world. There's an itchiness here to burn it, to pull it out of the ground and provide more electricity, and I understand that urge. However, we can't do that until we find a way to sequester the carbon emissions, and we need to move on the technology in order to do that. I mean, the technology will be critical because China, India, European countries are moving ahead with coal plants every single day, and they're burning dirtiness into the air every single day, and the world is hurting because of it. If we can't move on the technology to sequester the carbon, the world's in peril.
Yeah. A lot of good information in the Progress Report. Check it out, progressreport.org. Faz Shakir, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Talk to you again real soon. Coming up next, the co-authors of True Patriot, Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer, will join us. And will they be wearing American flag lapel pins? I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by the National Pest Management Association. Don't let the bedbugs bite, and don't let those termites eat you out of house and home either. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. Global warming has allowed mountain pine beetles to survive farther north than they used to. And as a consequence, the beetles are killing trees, killing them by the millions, according to the Canadian Forest Service. The outbreak has reportedly affected over 51,000 square miles in the western United States and Canada. Those dead trees no longer take carbon dioxide. Instead, as they decompose, they could release 990 megatons of carbon dioxide, causing more global warming. And the green grass grows all around, as we shall hear. After this, who do you depend on to help protect your family's health and property? Well, doctors, of course, and firefighters and police officers, but how about pest professionals? They're your best defense against household pests like bedbugs, mice, and termites. Pests like these contribute to asthma and serious illness and property damage. To learn all about household pest threats and to locate a qualified pest professional near you to help protect your family, visit pestworld.org.
Experience the joy of designing your own ring at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Even though Jared has an incredible selection of spectacular diamond engagement rings, many Jared customers prefer to design their own. It's easy to understand why. You can select from hundreds of settings in gold or platinum at Jared, and then choose from thousands of diamonds in a wide variety of shapes and sizes to create a ring that's yours and yours alone.
It can only be Jared!
Once upon a time in the West, there were trees by the millions. There was a tree all in the wood, the prettiest tree that you ever did see. Oh, the tree in a hole in the ground, and the green grass grew all around, and the green grass grew all around. Birds used to nest in those trees, and the birds would lay their eggs. And what would become of them all when it got warmer, and the beetles came, and the trees fell by the millions? And the carbon dioxide made it warmer. And with the warmth came more beetles. And so on, and so on, and so on. Oh, the bug on the tree, and the nest on the branch, the egg in the nest, and the branch on the limb on the tree in a hole, and the hole in the ground. And the green grass grew all around, and the green grass grew all around. The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s of these programs can be found at theosgoodfile.com. Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. And the question has arisen, is Barack Obama tough enough? And is he patriotic enough?
I would walk 10 miles on my hands and knees. Ain't no doubt about it, baby, you are in the bees. I wrestle with the lion and the grizzly bear. It's my life, baby, but I don't think that tough enough.
Returning to our program today, the co-authors of True Patriot, A Manifesto, Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show today.
Thanks very much, Peter. Thanks for having us back.
It's good to talk to each of you, and I appreciate the work you've been doing even more after what we saw from the ABC television primetime debate between Obama and Clinton. And the way that things were set up, they used a question from a viewer who said, "Now, I'm not questioning your patriotism, Senator Obama, but why don't you wear an American flag lapel pin?" And this came up, too, in just a verbatim from a supporter of Obama's from California who was making calls to people in Pennsylvania. And he reported to a columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle that one of the most frequent questions that came up was, well, why won't he wear a flag pin? And I asked you on the program today because this really bothers me. This is a McCarthy-type tactic that is being used. And it really, I wish that Obama had reached into his suit pocket, because your book is small enough to fit there, and pulled out a copy of True Patriot and said, you know, you ought to read this, because my version of patriotism might be a little different from yours, but I am no less patriotic and American than anyone else. Eric, first, what was your reaction when you saw that exchange on the debate?
Well, I had the same reaction in terms of wishing he would pull our book out of his jacket lapel pocket. But but I think more broadly, I mean, you know, what Nick and I argued in The True Patriot is that progressives for too long have gotten pounded by the media and certainly by their opponents on the right for not, you know, demonstrating enough love of country. And that dynamic has two parts to it. One is that the right loves to beat us up and create these false symbolic issues about whether you're wearing a lapel pin or putting your hand on your chest when you're saying the pledge or whatnot. But the other part of the equation is that too many of us on the progressive side have fallen out of the habit of articulating just why we love our country and what that means and where that comes from and why it's not just about a symbolic thing about a lapel pin, but why it comes down to your deeply held values. And unfortunately for everybody, what we are arguing in this book is playing out precisely in the way Obama's campaign is going right now. He's both getting hit and not really finding the words or the voice or the story to be able to say what his notion of patriotism really boils down to, and how it's not about these symbolic gestures. It's about having a moral framework that's about shared obligation and stewardship and, being part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. Nick Hanauer, your reaction?
I fundamentally agree with Eric. I certainly think that Obama is every bit the patriot that Senator McCain is. But he has indeed not been able to find his voice, and I wish he would. He made that extraordinary speech on race some weeks ago, mm-hmm. Perhaps the best speech on race that anyone's made, you know, certainly in my adult lifetime. But I think that he missed the point in a certain sense, because the fracas wasn't about race fundamentally. It was about the sort of backstory, the undergirding of the story was questions about his patriotism, the lingering doubts that many Americans have about Democrats' ambivalence with respect to America. And I think that fundamentally that's the question that's going to play out in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, is you know, and I don't think it's fair, but it is real.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely something that Senator Obama needs to shore up. He needs to sharpen up.
Now, let me ask you each the same question here, too, and that is, Obama did have an answer, and he responded, I don't think with enough passion or even anger at having his patriotism impugned, but he did say that he defined patriotism as his work on the Veterans Affairs Committee, and that every day he tries to recognize the contribution that veterans have made and make appropriate responses to that. But as he was saying that, I was thinking of that movie, The American President, and Michael Douglas's soliloquy toward the end when he finally gets fed up and just unburdens himself. And I kind of wish that Obama had lit things up a little bit when he responded to that series of questions. Eric?
Well, I agree completely. I wish he had gotten exercised in that way as well. And, you know, the fact that he hasn't speaks to the larger issue here, which is that when people are saying in those phone calls that they wonder why he's not wearing a lapel pin, they're speaking about the fact that patriotism to them is not just an issue in the head, it's an issue of the gut, too. And this is something that Democrats in general, progressives, and Barack Obama in particular right now, are forgetting, which is that, you know, his answer was lovely, and the words of his answer were just fine, that, you know, working on veterans' issues is patriotic, and everything he's done in his career is patriotic. But this is a gut thing, too. And unfortunately, for over a generation now, there's been a storyline that's been playing out in our politics that shapes people's initial gut reactions. And that storyline says that Democrats are presumed to not love their country until proven otherwise. And we have to break that presumption. We have to break it with passion, with a little bit of anger, and with a little bit of, you know, righteousness that says, no one gets to question my patriotism. And let me tell you why I love this country and what I think is great about this country. And it's not simply I care about things and so I'm patriotic. It's not simply I dissent and protest and point out what's wrong and so I'm patriotic. It's let me tell you in a full-throated, full-hearted, full-gut way what's great about this country. And whether or not I wear a lapel pin, no one's going to tell me, son of, you know, a Kenyan and a Kansan, no one's going to get to tell me that I don't love this country enough.
Yeah.
And if I can say that, yeah. You know, I think it goes farther than that. I think the Democrats need to assert that our version of patriotism is better. That it's not just the same. That it is in fact superior. That the version of patriotism that Eric and I have offered up is in fact one that actually puts the country first, right? A version of patriotism that doesn't subordinate the best interests of the country to the capital markets, that encourages us to be proud of the taxes we pay rather than complain about them and say that they're, you know, theft or stealing, that encourages us to be stewards of the nation's treasure. That I think that as Democrats and progressives, we need to go beyond saying, hey, we're patriotic too. We need to get to saying, actually, you're the ones that aren't patriotic. This version is, in fact, superior.
Yeah. That's Nick Hanauer, together with his co-author, Eric Liu. Their book is The True Patriot, and if you'll indulge me with a reading from page 35. We the people believe it's time for progressives to reclaim patriotism, not to reinvent it, but to restore it, to return to a tradition that is more than chauvinism or showboating. It's time to rededicate ourselves to a true American patriotism, a civil religion of purpose that answers our deepest needs and fears in this time of uncertainty. And this patriotism belongs not to party, but to country. It is time to distinguish with brutal honesty between false patriots and true American patriots. False patriots think that wearing little flags on their lapels is the full measure of their patriotic duty. True patriots may sometimes wear such flags too, but know that acts, not badges, are the true marker of devotion to country. I think that's a very powerful statement. And one of the elements here that it just points up the false patriotism and the phoniness is that so many of the people who level the charge and ask Obama why he's not wearing a flag lapel pin don't even have one on at the time they're asking the embarrassing question.
That happened in classic form on MSNBC, I think.
Yeah.
With this Republican congressman from Georgia. And, you know, put aside that fact of hypocrisy, which is endemic, you know, in politics there. That little excerpt you just read from The True Patriot, there's one really important part to that. And it's not even about the lapel pin. It's the word purpose. That true patriotism is rooted in a sense of purpose. It's not just chest thumping and saying we're number one and we love this country because we're number one. It's saying we love this country because we have a unique and an exceptional purpose in the world. And right now, I mean, the reason why Nick and I even came to this project was out of frustration with the way that our politics today is so completely ignoring the drift and the potential decline of this great country. And we just came down to a simple question for us of what's it going to take to keep America great? And when you think about that question, you start peeling back, what are the roots of our greatness? And the roots of our greatness are not measured just in GDP and not just in military might. The roots of our greatness are measured in the far more powerful and lasting and maybe less tangible things like our values and like the sense of obligation that we have to one another and certainly to the next generation. And that sense of purpose is something that I wish Barack Obama could speak about more powerfully. I wish Hillary Clinton would speak about more powerfully. And I wish John McCain would, too, in ways that are not just in defense of this administration. John McCain, actually, of the three of them, has more practice talking about patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is his notion of patriotism, you know, is fairly confined to military service, and there are so many other ways to express through your act this sense of purpose for what it means to be a great country.
Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer, co-authors of True Patriot. It's out in hardcover. It's a great book, a bright red cover, and a small book with very powerful big ideas. If you have a comment or a question, join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show, sponsored today by Polypoint Press and John Gorenfeld's Bad Moon Rising. It's a powerful new book about Reverend Moon and the Washington Times propaganda machine. And check out the video on the web. Visit thekingofamerica.com. You'll see people like George H.W. Bush and some elected leaders currently in Washington cozying up to Reverend Moon. It's scary and funny all at the same time. Let's go to Leonard in Livermore. Thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show. Hi, Leonard.
Hello, Mr. Collins. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. And I really miss you here live in the Bay Area, so hopefully we'll find a chance to get you back live again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But we got a lot of fans who stay up late and listen to the show on Green 960, and we're happy for them.
All righty, groovy. Listen, there's one very important thing that I really want to put out into the public sphere, and it's a question that no one's asking. And the question is, if anybody's noticed, the mainstream media keeps turning what Reverend Wright said into linking it to a racial issue. Now, the question I want people to ask, and I would love for you to ask, and possibly have a conversation on, is what specifically did Reverend Wright say derogatory about white Americans? And no one's asking that question, yet they keep calling it racial. And my question is, since when did the statement, God damned America, become a racial slur against white Americans?
Well,
and
Leonard, there's
that
a whole...
is disturbing.
There are 20 years of sermons that Reverend Wright gave, and I have to tell you, I have not studied them. And like you, I've been subjected to the selective clips that have been played to try to embarrass him and, in turn, Senator Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But let me focus first on patriotism, because Reverend Wright served in the United States military with honor.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, of course, he has become a man of the cloth, and his service to the country is a part of the message that he has imparted. Now, he has views that are really shaped by his experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't pretend to judge them or to know that what he says is right or wrong. I do know that when you take it out of context and have Sean Hannity serve it up on the Fox News channel,
mm-hmm.
it's not intended to promote understanding or to try to help people learn about what Reverend Wright was actually trying to say. And so I think that there are a lot of powerful messages that he has offered, some of which might be off-key or even seen as inaccurate by some Americans.
Uh-huh.
But when you look at the full context of his remarks, they're often quite rational, and I find them compelling.
Well, I know that, and you know that, but considering, unfortunately, and I think Barack, to his credit, is trying to bring us out of the soundbite culture. But I really do, and I understand, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I really think that question needs to be put out there.
All right, well, let me ask. Hold on, Leonard. Let's ask our guest. First of all, Nick Hanauer, what's your reaction about Reverend Wright and the racist angle, the label that is often laid on him?
Yeah, he's been giving sermons for 20 years, and I have not studied the body of his work. And, you know, surely the Fox News soundbite is aimed, to make whatever he said worse than it is. But I do think that the right has seized upon Reverend Wright's, legitimate complaints about the state of our union and converted those into, fear that Reverend Wright is anti-white, racist, and, but more particularly that he's anti-American, that this is the fundamental political problem that Senator Obama faces and the Democrats face, is that legitimate grievances about the state of our union, the way in which the country is being run, are converted into this notion that Democrats don't love our country. And that's both false, but it's also politically dangerous and damaging. Yeah. And as Democrats, we need to fight against that.
Got to take a break here. Leonard, thanks for a great question.
Thank you.
I appreciate you listening to the program. More of your calls if you join me next, 888-5 Peter B. My guests are Eric Liu, LIU, and Nick Hanauer, the co-authors of The True Patriot. It's out at your local independent bookstore. You can buy it online, too. More in a moment on The Peter B. Collins Show. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view, and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it 5 times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud of all the good things we've done. There's television, free religion, rock and roll, and an old Times Square, give a dinner, a couple of wells, and won't give you a price reduction, reconstruction, peace, core, and lots more culture that we got to live. I'm proud.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. That's a wacky song from the Tubes. You remember them? A satire band out of San Francisco in the 1970s. And their definition of pride in America is all based on consumerism and what you got. Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer are trying to redefine America's idea of patriotism. Their book, The True Patriot, is out in hardcover for just $10, and I encourage you to pick it up. I think it's very powerful, and it's persuasive, and it presents a new way to think about these issues and to try to win back from the right control of this whole concept of patriotism in America today. Jake in Eureka joins us. Hi, Jake. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter B. I have a question for your guest. I'd like to know, when exactly did blind, unquestioning support for Bush and Cheney's disastrous foreign policy become the standard for, you know, American patriotism?
Okay. Who wants to take that first?
I'd love to do it. It's Nick. You know, I think that there is some confusion in people's minds between loyalty and obedience. And you know, I think there are a lot of people who conflate the two. That there's a way to be loyal to the principles of this country and to be loyal to America, and unquestioningly patriotic, but ask a heck of a lot of questions of our leaders. And I do think that it is as simple as that, as a conflation of loyalty and obedience.
You know, I got to say, Peter and Jake, it's a great question, and it certainly, you know, highlights two things: the aggressive way in which the administration post 9/11, you know, really implanted this idea of our way or the highway and intimidated folks. But the second thing, again, I have to keep returning to this: the acquiescence of too many folks on the left. There were too many folks on the progressive side and Democratic Party who did not push back on that completely unacceptable notion that patriotism equals blind obedience to this administration's dictates. And, you know, I think one of the things that, even apart from an electoral cycle, forget that it's a presidential year, progressives over the long haul have to learn in a full-throated, passionate way to be able to articulate what patriotism means to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that means not just arguing and scoring debate points when you're tangling with the folks on the right, but it's speaking from the gut about what you're proud of. And what we're proud of here is what we've earned pride in. It's our deeds, it's our principles, and it's the fact that as progressives and as Americans, we have this set of ideals that is a bar that we're trying to get over, this set of ideals that's enshrined in our founding documents. And the story of America is that we are always trying to get to that bar.
Mm-hmm.
We're never quite getting there, but we're always trying to get there. And every time this country has moved closer to that bar, it's been because of progressive patriotism, not because of this jingoistic patriotism and not because of a market-justifying right-wing patriotism.
Yeah.
And we as progressives have to be able to say that and say it with pride.
Jake, thank you very much for a good question. And gentlemen, I got an email the other day from a listener, and it was one that I saw several months ago. It came from Iowa. Back in January, and it was a picture of Obama, Clinton, one other candidate, and the wife of Tom Harkin. I guess the other one was Richardson. And everybody but Obama had hand over heart, either in preparation for a Pledge of Allegiance or the National Anthem. And this picture, you know, is certainly taken out of context. And I don't know if seconds later Obama joined them or if this was done right after the pledge or the anthem were finished and he was first to go back to an ordinary standing position.
But this is taken out of context, and it's sent around on the internet as a whisper campaign. You never know exactly where it came from, and those who are impugning his patriotism don't have the courage to put their own names on it. How do we challenge this kind of underhanded approach? Nick first, and then Eric, and we got about 20 seconds each.
I think the fact that this comes up speaks to the urgency of this issue for progressives and Democrats. The fact that it can come up at all is evidence of how exposed our flank is on the issue of patriotism.
Yeah, Peter, I mean, I think that, you know, this is not about that photograph or this image of whether his hands on his chest. You know, this is about the deeper storyline. There is a deeper storyline that we have to fight at every turn that says, again, that Democrats and progressives are presumed not to love their country until proven otherwise. And, you know, there's a reason why that photo got viral. Mm-hmm. And a photo, I'm sure you could find a photo of Bush or Cheney at an event where they didn't happen to have their hand on their chest. Those photos don't go viral because the underlying story is not one about Republicans being unpatriotic.
Right.
We've got to fight that.
Doesn't match the meme. Gentlemen, you got great ideas and a powerful book, The True Patriot, Eric Liu and Nick Hanauer. Thanks for returning to the show today.
Peter, you're the best.
All
thanks
right.
for having us back.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Bush administration says North Korea and Syria are working on nukes together. Syria's ambassador denies it.
They lied about the Iraqi WMDs, and they think they can do it again.
Democrats on the Hill throw some verbal brickbats at Saudi Arabia and the administration over oil prices.
To bark up the wrong tree and suggest that there's an easy fix to this, it's not fair to the American people, and it's absolutely misleading.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Harley Carnes. North Korea may have helped Syria build a nuclear weapons plant. CBS's David Martin has seen the U.S. intel photos and video released today to make that case.
A computerized mock-up demonstrates how it was tucked away in a remote canyon. Satellite photos showed construction was all but complete in August 2007. Before it could be fueled and begin operation, the Israelis bombed it. The director of national intelligence and the head of the CIA presented the photos to members of Congress, many of whom were outraged the administration had sat on the evidence for so long.
Syria's ambassador on CNN, Imad Mustafa, claims there's nothing sinister in it.
They showed me ridiculous satellite-taken photographs of a building in the Syrian desert saying this is a nuclear reactor. And I had to remind them that it is on one hand preposterous. On the other hand, there is something silly about this. Not a single security guard, no barbed wire.
This disclosure could, however, make a mess of the six-party talks to resolve the nuclear standoff with North Korea. Now this.
Honey? Have you seen the utility bill?
Uh-oh. Wow. What is it, honey?
Well, I'm not sure, but it's a lot lower than it was this time last year.
Oh, that's a big difference, is right.
It's time to see what going green can do with Eco Options products from the Home Depot. Through April 30th, get special deferred financing store-wide, including new Energy Star appliances, when you use your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
Why should buying a used car be any different than buying a new car? Shouldn't you be able to go to a dealer and feel completely confident about your purchase? Well, if it's a Honda certified used car, you can. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. They'll even provide you with a Carfax vehicle history report. See? Confidence restored. And here's the best part. It may be used, but it's still a Honda. Honda certified used cars.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
Can politicians help mitigate the price of oil and gas?
With gas prices continuing to soar, Democrats increase the pressure on several fronts. A group of senators, including Democrat Amy Klobuchar of Wisconsin, are threatening to hold up arms sales to Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states to pressure them to pump more oil.
We've got to stand up to this and say, you know, you're not going to be getting a bunch of arms from us and some kind of deals with us if you're not dealing with us fairly.
And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called on the administration to stop buying 70,000 barrels of oil a day for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and sell some of it to push prices down, a position endorsed at a hearing by consumer groups and representatives of the trucking industry. Bob, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The White House says if Congress had passed the president's energy policy, the nation would be farther down the road to independence and sufficiency by now.
What would be most productive on Capitol Hill right now is to take measures into their own hands and work to make sure that we are increasing production and exploration here in our own country so that we can reduce our dependence on foreign sources of energy.
Oil today came down $2.24 to just over $116 a barrel. The CEOs of Delta and Northwest Airlines try to convince lawmakers in Washington their merger is a good deal for everyone. Delta's Richard Anderson.
We collectively create in excess of $1 billion in benefits, and that's very important for these two airlines given the headwinds we face on fuel and the economy.
Flight Attendants Union VP Velda Shook.
This merger cannot be permitted to become a vehicle for union busting. These executives have realized the opportunity that this merger presents, not just a chance to prevent thousands of non-union employees from gaining a union, but also a chance to eliminate the unions that have already provided protection for their members at Northwest.
If your DNA says you're likely to develop cancer or Alzheimer's or something, an employer should ignore that knowledge and hire you or keep you.
No American should be denied health insurance or be fired from a job because of genetic testing.
Senator Ted Kennedy.
It prohibits insurers and employers from seeking genetic information or requiring individuals to take genetic tests.
The bill against genetic discrimination passed the Senate, goes on to the House. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I want a healthcare company that helps me stay healthy.
Staying healthy matters. That's why Aetna believes in the power of preventive care. We offer plans that cover a range of preventive services from annual checkups to well baby visits at no cost to our members.
It's like they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
We want you to know. Aetna. To learn more, go to Aetna.com.
Plans offered by Aetna Life Insurance Company. Health insurance plans contain exclusions and limitations.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. Only at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. From April 24th through the 28th, save up to 25% on exceptional paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Gun owners have said if just one law-abiding gun bearer...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk about military and veterans issues with our contributor, Scott Dick. And I fear that today an hour won't be enough. We'll do our level best. Scott Dick served in the Marine Corps, jumped over to the Army, where he retired at the rank of Major, and he now is a radio talk show host based in Monterey at our flagship radio station, KRXA. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine.
It's okay to throw in a qualifier. These are difficult times.
My head's smoking, Peter.
Well, I know, and we'll get to the op-ed that you wrote a little bit later in the hour about the generals who appear on television promoting the administration and the Pentagon and the contractors without full disclosure. I know you're amped up about that. And we're also going to talk about the difficult topic of veterans committing suicide. But I want to lead with the developments that just broke in the last 24 hours. Not a real surprise, but General Petraeus has been named the new CENTCOM commander by the Bush administration, subject to approval from the Senate, which will not withhold it.
Wow, Peter, I never would have seen this coming ever before in a million years. Where, you know, the war czar, that's General Lute. I finally dug out his name from the way back in the back of my head. And
you read my mind. I was trying to summon his name on my walk this morning, the war czar. Whatever happened to that guy?
I said, remember what I said, Peter? I said, this guy is going to be nothing but a gopher, a go-between. He's going to go down there, and he's going to tell him what the president wants him to say, and then he's going to come back up. And it reminds me of those days when they didn't have crypto machines. They'd shave a guy's head and tattoo the message on the back of his head and let his hair grow out and then send him through the enemy lines. And that's kind of what Lute is doing.
Uh-huh. That's a beautiful image.
Yeah, so, you know, and the fact that Petraeus, you know, they probably floated that, hey, let's get rid of Fallon because, you know, he's just a stick in the mud. He's got these real depressive, he's a, you know, anti-victory admiral. He needs to go.
Well, you know, Scott, I have to ask you about it from this perspective, because my focus has been more on the risk of a new war with Iran, which is not to say that I don't have distress and concern over what we've got going in Iraq and Afghanistan, but the idea of widening this in the Middle East and taking on a military power and a nation that is much more formidable than either Afghanistan or Iraq concerns me greatly. So this past Sunday, I was moderator of an event where Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, spoke, and he articulated his concerns about the Bush administration's ideas or, you know, potential against Iran. And he pointed out three things. One is that in the defense of one of the appropriations bills last year, there was money allocated for a very large bunker buster non-nuclear munitions device. Its due date, April 2008. Then there were instructions in there to modify some B-2 bombers in order to carry this very large bunker-busting bomb. And the due date for that was April 2008. Then there were instructions to modify some hangars, either in the Emirates or, I don't remember, maybe it's Diego Garcia, one of the air bases within flying distance of Tehran and the Iranian nation. They modified the hangar there to fit in this enlarged B-2 bomber with the huge bunker-busting bomb.
B-2 or B-52?
I think he said B-2.
Okay.
So his argument is that the plans are in place, and what it takes is a triggering event and authorization from the president, who, of course, wouldn't bother to consult the Congress on a war powers issue like this. So my concern is that Admiral Fallon had articulated in the comments that led to his early retirement that he was very concerned that the journalist asked him if he was the last man standing between Dick Cheney and an assault on Iran, and I think he answered in the affirmative. So this is my concern, that General Petraeus is willing to take orders from Bush and attack Iran, and it appears Admiral Fallon was not.
You mean to say, Peter, that this yes man, who is a four-star general, who's been saying yes for the last couple of years, is suddenly going to say no, even though it's in the best interest of his country not to attack Iran? And, you know, let me say this about Scott Ritter. He was an inspector looking for weapons of mass destruction. So if he can read the tea leaves, you know, he's a lot smarter than I am in that regard. That's frightening that they actually got money for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure. This administration is so short-sighted, and Bush is the least curious president in all of our nation's history. Have they not seen the ties between the Maliki government and the state of Iran? And if they were to attack Iran, I don't know what they think would happen in Iraq.
Well, it's very confusing because we set up the government Paul Bremer did, set up the way the elections were going to be held, and that it was done by ethnic group and not by personalities or individuals who were running for office. So we set up the government in Baghdad to favor the Shia, and surprise, surprise, it does. We installed Maliki, who has friends in Tehran, and then we're surprised that there is a coziness between the governments of Baghdad and Tehran. And we then try to drive a wedge in there and say, well, but Iran is fueling these new, they're now called special groups. And that term doesn't mean a lot to me, but at least it's not just calling everybody Al-Qaeda, who we can't properly identify. And it appears that, you know, there is this chorus of voices. Here's the New York Times on Thursday. Nearly three-quarters of the attacks that kill or wound American soldiers in Baghdad are carried out by Iranian-backed Shiite groups, the United States military said on Wednesday. Now, we've been hearing this quite a bit.
Peter, all of the militia, if they're Shia, are supported by Iran. This is absurd. This is absolutely nonsensical. The Maliki government, they were in exile in Iran, so all of his militias are supported by the Iranians. And Mukhtar al-Sadr is a cleric, a Shia cleric. He goes back and forth because that's what Shia clerics do between Iraq and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So the holiest sites in Shia, the Shia world, are in Iraq. And some of the most important imams are in Iran. You don't think they're going to cross? This whole idea, of course the Iranians support the Shia militia. All of them. And, you know, Maliki was just trying to get Muqtada al-Sadr under control by killing a few of his militia. Except he forgot to tell the Americans that's what he's going to do. This is ridiculous to say for the Washington Post to be so lame. I mean, the New York Times to be so lame as to say, well, they're supporting the... And then just regurgitating Department of Defense talking points. They should have no credibility whatsoever after the performance of these 15 senior colonels and generals.
Let me read a little further here. The American military uses the term special groups to describe groups trained by Iran that fight alongside the Mahdi army but do not obey the orders of Muqtada al-Sadr. But Colonel Alan Bachelet, the Baghdad division's chief of staff, conceded that there was overlap between these two groups. These two groups are so amorphous, they go back and forth between one another, he said. We see evidence of a guy who might be working very hard inside JAM, that's the Iraqi acronym for the Mahdi Army, to present himself as a mainstream kind of compliant person. Yet we have other indicators that will show him kind of working the night job, doing special group criminal kind of stuff. His staff said that 114 rocket and mortar attacks that had hit the green zone in the past month, 82% of those were fired from Sadr City. Well, now, there's no surprise there.
And not only that, Peter, but the majority of the police and military are also Shia, who present themselves as mainstream or regular people during the day when they're in uniform, and then turn the weapons we provided to them back on us. And our allies, our supposed allies. This is ridiculous to try to parse out. Well, these are Iranian-backed special groups, but these Iranians are different. These militia, these Iranian-backed special groups are different. I mean, this is ridiculous.
And in the most recent Petraeus Crocker show on Capitol Hill, they were intoning these same themes, saying that it's these special groups from Iran. And this, I believe, is an effort to lead the American people astray into believing that we need to attack Iran, A, because they want a nuclear weapon, and B, because they're meddling in our occupation of Iraq.
Let's see. How rich? I have an irony ladder, and that's way high on the irony ladder, on the irony scale. We're upset at the Iranians because they're meddling in our occupation of their neighboring country?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this makes me laugh. I mean, this is so, you know, at first it was these special penetrator improved explosive devices that the Iranians were giving the militia to attack the Americans. And then it was, you know, the Al-Qaeda in Iran. And then it was, and I have a suspicion about why, Peter, they're not calling them anything but special groups now. But we could talk about it in a few minutes. It's a memo taking away Al-Qaeda and jihadist and all that from the vernacular.
We have a whole new vocabulary?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. Yep. We're going to take a break. Scott Dick is with us this entire hour, and your calls and comments are welcome about veterans' issues, about the occupation of Iraq, about the promotion of General Petraeus and General Odierno. Lines are open for you. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. If you're listening late night in San Francisco or on the weekends in Seattle or Portland, your best bet is to drop me an email. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
From Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Good afternoon. We'll start you off in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Southbound 17 at Summit Road, a pickup truck broken down. That blocks the right-hand lane. City streets of San Martin, Murphy Avenue at East Middle Avenue. A farm tractor and a car involved in a crash. That does have some lanes blocked. You have CHP on the way to check up there. From Monterey County, eastbound 68 before Laguna Seca, an accident where a car is blocking one of the eastbound lanes. We have another car off to the side, and CHP is on the scene taking care of that. Highway 17, you have heavy traffic southbound onto southbound 1 in Santa Cruz. The fish hook, that's usual there. And a stop-and-go traffic on southbound 1 making your way down into Aptos right now. This is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. During National Donate Life Month, the California Transplant Donor Network urges you to sign up to be a donor and talk to your family about your decision. Call 1-866-99-DONATE or visit ctdn.org. That is traffic. I'm Nate Nix on KRXA.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Taking your phone calls about military and veterans issues. Our contributor, Scott Dick, is with us this hour. Toll free, my number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Scott, earlier this week, another of our regular contributors, Jason Leopold, who's an independent investigative reporter, broke the story that on average, every day, 18 veterans commit suicide. Now, those are not all from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's the entire veterans population. But it is heavily loaded with those who recently have served, and particularly those who've returned with brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries, they're called, and also post-traumatic stress disorder. Tell me what it means to you when you hear that figure and that trend, which is, a tragedy of its very own.
Well, it's frightening and ominous, both. We've never sent troops into successive tours into a combat zone. Normally, even in World War II, at the height of the combat, they would rotate units out from the front and keep them out while they could reconstruct and sort of rehabilitate themselves, and then they'd go back into conflict. But everybody was fighting versus just a few. We have just a few of our population. We had over 3 million troops in Europe on VE Day, Victory Europe Day, May of 1945. 3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this paltry little force doing the work of probably four times as many. I mean, we know that we have twice as many, or almost twice as many contractors there. And so if we added the contractors to the troops, we'd have, it'd be close to maybe 350,000, maybe 400, closer to what Eric Shinseki said we should have there. Without the correct number of troops, this is a pile-on effect, and then they get out because they don't want to go back. If they can get out, they get out, and they don't want to go back to Iraq and engage in this, and then there's nothing for them. The VA has been woefully inadequate, enough so that some veterans are suing them in a class-action lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Bush administration argued, the lawyers said, veterans are not, how did they put it?
They're not entitled to specific types of health care.
Correct, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Not entitled to the health care. We promised you we'll take care of you, but that's really a lie. If it comes right down to it, we won't honor it because it happens to be maybe politically inconvenient for us.
Mm-hmm. And the lawsuit you're referencing has been brought by Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth. It is before a court in San Francisco. And the attorney, the lead lawyer for the two veterans groups, is named Gordon Erspammer. There is a profile of him in the San Francisco Chronicle on Thursday. And the trial is not seeking monetary damages, but is asking the court to appoint a special master or otherwise intervene to make the department run more efficiently, and in particular, to deal with the mental claims, including PTSD.
Well, their defense has been, well, we've hired all these people, and we've opened up all these clinics. That was in late 07, 08. They did nothing but drag their heels, and in fact, there's a couple of memorandums going around in the media showing that they actually conspired to keep the statistics from going to being made public in an interview. Now they're calling for the one of the directors of this at the VA to resign, and he's mm-hmm. not going to resign, Peter. It's going to take congressional pressure because nobody in the Bush administration takes responsibility for their actions. And this is the administration that lies and says that they support the troops and that we should, too. We should give them another $102 billion because it goes to support the troops, which is an out-and-out crock.
Well, and the VA went to some lengths to try to keep this information from getting public. They've tried to dodge the question of how many vets commit suicide. And it says, overall, there are 6,600 suicides per year among the 25 million veterans of all wars. There's an estimated 1,000 suicide attempts per month among veterans being treated by the VA. And it says suicides tend to be more frequent among older veterans, but they apparently are unwilling to break out the actual numbers related to Iraq and Afghanistan vets.
There's a medical clinic, a VA clinic out in the east that actually closed its doors indefinitely because it had its fourth suicide in the facility in the last month or month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, there's nothing we could do, so we have to close it because we don't know what's going on.
Here's Lisa in Eureka on this matter. Hello, Lisa.
Hello. You know, I live in a rural area, so we see a lot of the vets that are coming out of our little clinic up here in Humboldt County. And they say the same thing, that the clinics that are opening in some of the smaller areas are woefully inadequate anyway.
Well, I can't challenge that. I have no reason to disbelieve the vets.
No, in fact, that would be part and parcel of the way the VA does business. They just bring up these numbers and show how they spent this money allocated. Peter, let me rephrase that. Allocated this money towards preventing veteran suicide, how they've opened the clinics. And if you see some of the newspaper ads, they're looking for, you know, they're contracting it out.
So, exactly. I mean, they're doing a lot of contracting out. I mean, these physicians are busting their butts, but they can't do a lot of the things, and they can't handle a lot of the issues that these vets that aren't even, I mean, not even the Gulf War vets or the Iraq vets now, they can't handle the vets from previous wars.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's shameful. And we have John McCain, who's come along, and you know his attitude on vets is they don't need a GI Bill. The one they have is good enough.
Well,
if you give them a better GI Bill, they'll get out.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask.
Okay.
Thank you, Scott. Lisa,
well, thank you, gentlemen.
I appreciate your call. We'll take more calls in the next segment. 888-5 Peter B. Scott Dick is with us this hour. We're talking about military and veterans issues, including the occupation of Iraq. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced by Katrina Rill, Brian Urban taking your calls.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Resorting to the popular vote, this is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Democrats are becoming desperate. This delegate contest is like a flipped coin that lands on the table and won't stop spinning. It's like a lottery drawing where the ping pong balls refuse to enter the chute. The Clinton and Obama campaigns need some other measure that will sway the superdelegates. Something decisive, yet simple and familiar, and they seem to have found one. The popular vote. That's where regular people vote and the candidate votes wins. It's the system we're building in Iraq. Yes, now you remember. So, Hillary Clinton now claims that if you include the renegade states of Florida and Michigan, she has a lead of 12,000 votes out of 31 million, or 0.03%. Barack Obama says it's silly to count Michigan since his name wasn't even on the ballot, and without Michigan, he's ahead by 315,000 votes. But my question is, how do we know that Florida and Michigan still feel the way they felt back in February when they voted? I mean, back in February, nobody could quote two words from Barack Obama's pastor, and everybody had forgotten Hillary Clinton even went to Bosnia. And for that matter, who can be sure how Iowa and New Hampshire feel these days? For all we know, they wish Joe Biden was back.
I leave residual troops behind because you're going to have a minimum of 4,000 civilians there.
Senator Obama, where do you come down on this question? How many troops are going to have to stay for how long?
I think Joe is right.
It seems so long ago. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant and Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. Out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch, but it wasn't because I didn't know enough, I just knew too.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, sponsored by Polly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's powerful new book called Bad Moon Rising, all about Reverend Moon and the Washington Times propaganda machinery. Check out the video on the web at thekingofamerica.com. Gnarls Barkley there, CeeLo and Danger Mouse on tour behind a new CD. Gotta make a note. Note to self, pick up the new Gnarls Barkley.
But think twice. That's my only advice.
We continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans issues, and Dave, who is an actual client of the Veterans Administration, joins us here on the program. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Peter and Scott. That was quick. I just returned from approximately 1 month at the San Francisco VA hospital, and I felt an obligation to make a report on it in light of your conversation there. I do believe that at the level of doctors, nurses, social workers, the working people, they are very much dedicated, conscientious, and strive to do the very best they can. I think they fear that many attempts are being made to pull cuts at the top that will limit them, that will have them having to do layoffs and cutbacks. However, Congress hasn't agreed with this. They have said, no, you will not do that to our veterans. And I thought it was a pretty courageous stand. So still right now, as of right now, a veteran can anticipate receiving excellent care from some very dedicated professionals at the VA clinic.
Well, now, Dave, what about the mental health issues and this high suicide rate? Because with 18 mostly men ending their lives every day, that speaks to people who are not able to get appropriate support and mental health care.
You know, I may have been just myself in a lucky place at a lucky time. I don't know that. There may be those who are not able to receive appropriate care because budgets are limited in some places. And I did understand that some of those suicides are occurring right inside of VA facilities, or at least that was the case with one of the suicidals.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't picture that. From what I saw at San Francisco, very, very conscientious, dedicated professionals, specialists of all kinds, there to do what they can to help get you back and right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I experienced, and so I've got to say it. And you know, I have enough obnoxious gall that if it was otherwise, I would be saying that right here.
I do know that, Dave, so I value your comments. Thank you very much. And Scott, would you like to add to that?
Well, it's always, you know, the lower levels that when it's hard to hate somebody when you get to know them. And I think the administration, since they've never spent a day, most of them have never spent a day in uniform, they wouldn't know a vet if they walked up to them in the street. Now, they'd probably step over them if they're homeless anyway. So it's always been a big disconnect between the top of the middle top of the bureaucracy and all everybody who has to actually meet with veterans who have issues, whether they're health or psychological, and actually deal with them. And it's hard to send one away who is suicidal. Although we have seen in the, I think it was last year, where they actually did that, and that Marine did kill himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scott, moving on to another subject here, because of the demands of the long tours and the resource demands on the humans in the military, the standards for Army recruiting were lowered again in 2007. And let me just tick off some categories and numbers here. They recruited 130 dopers, 106 burglars, 56 grand larceny specialists, and that's not the video game, 43 convicted of aggravated assault, 28 robbers, 27 forgers, 21 guys who knew they had stolen property, 15 B&E specialists, that's breaking and entering, 12 hot check writers, 12 embezzlers, gosh, there's now Grand Theft Auto, that's a whole separate category, 11 of those, but most troubling, 5 people who've been convicted of rape, sexual assault, or sexual abuse were recruited into the military, into the Army, last year.
That's appalling. Now, I know that the Bush administration can use the forgers and the check writers and the embezzlers. They need them badly in the administration to try to get their counts together. They'll probably go to the highest level of Department of Defense. But the sexual assault, that's completely unacceptable. Unacceptable. And with the women in the military reporting that 33% of them have been either sexually harassed or sexually abused, including rape, why would you add that number, even 5, to units? Talk about good order and discipline. Besides that, Peter, I think there's a federal law that prohibits somebody from having a conviction from using weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was a big issue when that law was being debated about police officers who were involved in domestic violence, that they couldn't carry weapons after that.
Uh-huh.
So that's very interesting. But the other, you know, the B&E specialists, the forgers, they all have a place in the Republican administration.
Now, let's talk about the brass. The New York Times this past Sunday had a front-page article with like a dozen screenshots. These were video shots of generals and other top-ranking retired military officials appearing on television, usually promoting the point of view of the Bush administration, and rarely disclosing their own connections to military contractors or others who directly benefit from the kind of advice and analysis that they offer in their televised appearances.
Well, Peter, I would advise everybody within the sound of our voices to go to the New York Times and just search for general and analyst, and you'll get this story. And if you can't read the 11 pages because it's comprehensive, at least look at the 9 minutes of multimedia because it's very informative. And people should be outraged, and our media is completely dead silent. Now, Peter, these retired senior colonels and generals, mostly generals, and what's remarkably missing are the naval servicers. There's a couple of a full colonel, at the, you know, a couple of Navy guys and a couple of Marine Corps guys at the full colonel level, but no admirals or Marine generals.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because they have some ethics. But these characters who posed as independent, see, this is the key phrase, independent media analysts employed by all the networks, including the cable networks, also simultaneously, and as a friend of mine used to say, and at the same time,
yeah,
represented 150, between the 15 of them, 150 military contractors, either as lobbyists, senior executives, board members, or consultants. They were selling the Americans a bill of goods, and in fact, the Department of Defense made sure to remind them not to quote any of the information as coming from the Department of Defense. So the Department of Defense knew, what I call the War Department now, the War Department knew exactly what they were doing, and these hacks, these very unpatriotic generals, and this is where we could get into this whole patriotism argument,
mm-hmm,
and I disagreed with your last segment about how to we should regain the patriotism for the progressives by declaring our love for the country. We regain our patriotism by pointing to these unpatriotic generals and saying, they have done a disservice to the country. And in fact, Peter, I think they're complicit in the deaths of American soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Air Force airmen, because they could have ended this war earlier or helped change a strategy that would work, that would have worked faster. Instead, they worked to prolong it. And that's what makes this a story that's disgusting and should be an outrage. And there are not very many people out there that are outraged.
And Scott Dick wrote an op-ed piece that is on the web at opednews.com. If you go to their busy homepage and go to the search element there and enter Scott Dick and generals, you'll find this article. And it's no holds barred, and I agree with what Scott had to say there. I also think that I would extend the indictment you just made, Scott, to the corporate media in this country, because the New York Times deserves credit for running that article. It's only about 4.5 or 5 years too late. And we have seen the electronic media, particularly television, parade these generals out there, allow them to make hawkish comments and bellicose remarks and things that support the bad policies and the ill-considered plans of Bush, Rumsfeld, et al. And no disclosure was given about these corporate connections, about what board General so-and-so serves on, and about what his income is currently derived from. And these are failings that the media certainly could have corrected. Not only that, they allowed the Pentagon to choose the rented generals who appear on television for them. And they simply accepted those who were offered, so that the Pentagon acted as a central casting agency and provided the retired brass to appear on television and advance these talking points. It is a well-oiled propaganda machine that is part of, and people have modified what Eisenhower warned us about, it's the military-industrial media complex, because it all works as one big machine.
There's a new study out showing that the CBS and NBC, or CBS and ABC, in the run-up to the war, gave a tremendous amount of time and, you know, open mics to people that were for the war and very little to people that were against.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. I hadn't completed by the time we go on air. But this other thing, they actually went and met with Rumsfeld and helped him craft messages. And that's why, looking at the documents that the New York Times provides, this is no Dan Rather, where was Bush in the National Guard deal memos. They got smart. They learned from that, and they put up the actual transcripts and pointed to where they had decided on a sentence, and then they pulled the transcripts from when these media analysts, and, you know, you can't spell analyst without anal, where they used those exact phrases in their independent analysis. It's disgusting, and
mm-hmm.
people should really be outraged, and we should be talking about, you know, their lack of patriotism, because they serve all of their experience, Peter, that they win, they make money off of, you paid for out of your wallet. All their college education, all their military schooling, everything was bought and paid for by the American taxpayer. They owe their allegiance first to the citizens of the United States, and not the stinking members who happen to be political appointees in the Department of Defense.
Scott Dick with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and next on my list of things to talk to Scott about is Hillary Clinton's very hawkish remarks recently about Iran. And John in Carmel Valley wanted to talk about it, so I'll let him introduce the topic. Go ahead, John, you're on the air.
She made those just before the Pennsylvania primary, right? And
that's
there were
right.
two shows in particular. Because I didn't hear them. I've heard the news about them. So.
Right. She appeared on ABC's Good Morning America, and then she appeared on Keith Olbermann's Countdown show. That was on Monday night before the primary. And she used language that was remarkable for its testosterone.
Talking just in these terms yesterday, but you had just heard them like a day or two before, right?
Right. Yeah, they are fairly fresh. So she talked about if Iran launched a nuclear attack on Israel, that we would respond with nuclear weapons. She was very explicit about that. She talked admiringly about the deterrent effect of the Cold War, and she didn't use the term mutually assured destruction, but that was the concept that drove us with nukes aimed at nukes, the Soviet Union and the United States. And to me, it was breathtaking to hear her invoke that concept into today's foreign policy. And to me, it undermines whatever wisdom you might think Hillary Clinton has in terms of foreign policy. It undermines the experience that she claims. And it is a reckless set of comments about a very sensitive part of the world. Scott, your take?
Well, the reality of Nagasaki and Hiroshima created in Americans the desire to renounce first strike. I don't know if we ever did, actually. Yeah, I think we did renounce first strike.
We have, in general. I don't know if it's still operative under the Bush administration.
Well,
probably
not,
a signing statement took care of it.
Yeah, and apparently it's not under the would-be Hillary Clinton either. Because nuclear weapons launched at Israel, wouldn't they receive nuclear weapons in return from Israel? And don't they have their own military and air force? And how is it the United States would respond to an attack? It's suddenly as if we decided that, you know, all of those customer service agencies have been outsourced to India. If Pakistan were to nuke India, then we'd be involved in that. This is really madness. And I think, Peter, she was trying to make up for her line about Bosnia. She's trying to show that she can be a commander-in-chief tough enough to push the button.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says really stupid things. That was stupid. I heard it. I saw the clip.
Yeah. John, I got time for a quick follow-up comment from you. Go ahead.
I'm not going to vote for her.
Okay. That was quick.
I mean, if she ends up somehow, she's lost it with me.
Thank you, John. That was succinct. I'm Peter B. Collins. We take a break and return. 888-5. Peter B. is our toll-free number. We're talking with Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and we'll start you off in Capitola. Heavy traffic there, southbound one at Park Avenue. A crash with two cars in the center divide. Another one off to the right-hand shoulder. We have reports of minor injuries and CHP on the scene, so definitely be prepared for some brake lights as you approach the scene. City streets of San Martin, Murphy Avenue at East Middle Avenue. An accident, farm tractor and a car mixed it up. They've both been cleared off to the right-hand shoulder now. An earlier crash, Highway 68 eastbound at Laguna Seca. That's been cleared out of the way, but there may still be some heavy traffic as you make your way through the area. The Fish Hook, South 17 onto southbound 1. Traffic beginning to build there. And this report's brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second. Get more done with Nextel Direct Connect only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. If you're out and about and you spot a traffic problem, we'd love to know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
I love coffee. I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia's the place for me. Coffee and tea, my honey and me, at Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries. Or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour, and Scott Dick is with us, our contributor on military and veterans issues. Next hour, we've got some breaking news for Central Coast and Bay Area listeners about the aerial spraying for the light brown apple moth. It has been suspended due to a court ruling. We'll give you the details and some more information coming up right after the top of the hour. Scott, I wanted to ask you briefly about Defense Secretary Gates and a speech that he gave this past week, sharply critical of the Air Force, saying that it's like pulling teeth to get them to do what he wants. This is kind of unusual to give a public speech reprimanding one branch of the military, isn't it?
Yeah, you would think he'd handle that closed door, get the chief of staff of the Air Force in there, and some, you know, combatant commanders are also Air Force generals, and ask them what the F is going on. And it probably has to do with the allocating aircraft assets. That's normally what it is. The Air Force has been grounding squadrons, and not of pilots but of logistics, and sending them to Iraq to run convoy duty. But they are always been, they run 4, 5, or 6 month tours. They don't send their troops out to the airmen out to do 15 month tours. They wouldn't. Even the Marine Corps doesn't do that. So He didn't really make pun. He did say that the Air Force is a great organization, full of great people, hardworking people, blah de blah de blah de. Oh yeah, but by the way, here, catch this hand grenade. I had a boss that when he scolded us, he was a great guy, and he'd just say, here, catch this hand grenade, unless he thought you really needed to put your butt kicked.
Well, it's a great way to end a sentence. It's the unexpected.
Yeah, so that's kind of what the speech was, and people were like, whoa. So I don't know if the Air Force generals, who their pension safely in hand, are going to do anything more, but if they're doing this to protect their troops, terrific.
Mm-hmm. Now, Scott, I understand that you have acquired the new vocabulary, the recommended lexicon of the current Defense Department.
Well, I thought something. I mentioned that to you before, Peter. About a month ago, I said it's weird because now they're talking about criminal gangs and the mafia in Iraq.
Mafia?
Oh, you didn't hear that?
No, I didn't know La Cosa Nostra has a branch in Baghdad.
You know, those Neapolitans, they'll move anywhere there's an opportunity. You know, they call them these criminal gangs, as Ahmadi militia members, and the ones who weren't adhering to the ceasefire as criminal gangs and the mafia. And I said that's very unusual because before they were jihadists and mujahideen and they were Islamofascists.
Yeah, I like that one.
Which one?
Islamofascist. It's absolutely meaningless.
Yeah, of course it is, much like the right wing's whole paradigm for Iraq.
Yeah, it suggests really hateful things to Caucasian Americans, but it doesn't mean anything.
Of course.
There are, you know, the term fascism does not apply to terrorist groups or, you know, these independent entities like Al-Qaeda.
Well, any political entity that uses terror as a way to achieve their political goals are not suddenly, you know, animal rights fascists. I mean, this is ridiculous. And I think it comes from Jonah Goldberg and that idiotic book he wrote called Liberal Fascism. It's just stupid. And so then we get to this, and it comes from the extremist messaging branch, which I didn't even know we had one, at the National Counterterrorism Center. And it's a memorandum they sent out to everybody, and it reminds people that jihadist or mujahideen is not to be used. Calling our enemies jihadis unintentionally legitimizes their actions. Use the term violent extremist or terrorist, and it goes through this whole thing. And
isn't one of the slang terms Haji for Muslims in Iraq used by American soldiers?
Yeah, but that's not an official term, and you know, I don't think that Condoleezza Rice would use Haj or Haji. But, and that references them making the sacred pilgrimage to Mecca.
Right.
And it's just slurs like... gook. And we've noticed if we listen carefully that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice doesn't say jihad anymore because that's giving, you know, we're giving terrorists legitimization.
Now, one of the few things that I actually agreed with Rumsfeld on was as he was hitting the door, he said, you know, I really regret that global war on terror label. And he actually tried to change GWAT at one point, but Bush wouldn't go along with it. Does this new vocabulary have a recommendation for the term?
Well, no, because the title of this government targets language in war on terror.
No.
So it sets the title. And
that's off limits.
Yeah, the whole idea that we've created this
I mean, this is, to me, this is the final peg of the foolishness factor. Now we said we weren't going to do body counts, and now we do body counts. We said we weren't going to do this, and now we've done that, and now we're changing the language because we need to make it so we don't alienate the other, you know, 450 million Muslims that are peace-loving and, right. and are religious, pious people.
Well, and Bush said that we would never, ever have bilateral talks with North Korea until last week. Hal in Coos Bay, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Scott Dick.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Hi, Hal. I called with something in the first of my mind, but now you've got me thinking about another part of it.
All right, make it quick. We got 40 seconds.
Yeah, well, okay. There is a group that could be called fascism and terrorists, and that's this regime. But
I'll give you that.
It seems like you know that they took that that term directly from the time that we were starting to point out the fact that that's what we would assume that they are.
Yeah, the move towards fascism, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed real popular, but that actually has been around from the 90s.
No, you have a good point there. I think they introduced it to inoculate the term and to control it. One other point, Hal. I just got 10 seconds. Go.
Okay. I say to myself, if I can't vote for Obama, I'm voting for Nader. Going green, 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 green.
All right. Thank you. You've got the last call because Oregon is at the very tail end of the primary process. It's going to be interesting. Scott, thank you for a great hour.
You're welcome, Peter. Anytime.
Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next, we're going to meet Steve Scholl Buchwald from the Pesticide Action Network and talk about spraying Californians from the air to try to eradicate the LBAM, the light brown apple moth.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family,
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say,
and puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The Bush administration says when Israel bombed a plant in Syria, it had good reason.
After long refusing to say anything at all about the Syrian nuclear reactor bombed by Israel last year, the administration is now revealing details, including that North Korea helped design and build it, and that it was nearly finished, though without any fuel. After leaking the information, the administration briefed members of Congress, including Republican Pete Hoekstra, who was not happy.
This could have and should have happened 8 months ago.
Members from both parties complain the administration only briefed them because they wanted to go public, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Syria denies the allegations. The IRS is working like there's a sale on taxes, and there is, in a way.
The Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson, reveals that the IRS is ahead of schedule in processing tax returns, so the first economic stimulus rebates can go out 4 days earlier than expected, starting this coming Monday. For most people, $600, going first to people who chose direct deposit on their tax returns, people who gave their bank account numbers, more than 7 million Americans to get the stimulus next week, and yes, the government wants us to spend the money.
CBS's Dan Revive in Washington. Food pantries are calling on farmers to grow a little extra for charity.
An organization in Chicago that is responsible for supplying food to hundreds of food pantries and soup kitchens in the area told me today that their numbers are up 12% this year. And what surprises them is not the typical homeless population. It's a lot of people showing up who have homes and they still have jobs, but their dollar is stretched so tight between fuel and maybe not getting a raise this year and their mortgage rates going up. and they need some help to put food on the table.
CBS's Cynthia Bowers in Chicago. Actor Wesley Snipes will have to wait a little bit to make his next movie. WKMG-TV reporter Mike DeForest.
Snipes blames his tax advisors for all of this. Eddie Ray Kane and Douglas Rozeal, they were also sentenced. The one who basically ran this anti-tax operation was sentenced to 10 years in prison. The other got a few less years, about 5 years or so. Wesley Snipes, though, for not paying taxes for 3 years, will be going to prison for 3 years, 1 year for each year that he failed to file taxes.
Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia talks about the 2000 election and the High Court's refusal to decide the Florida vote counting question in favor of Al Gore.
Was it political?
Gee, I really don't want to get it. I mean, this is, get over it. It's so old by now.
It's an exclusive interview by Leslie Stahl for 60 Minutes this weekend.
The principal issue in the case, whether the scheme that the Florida Supreme Court had put together violated the federal Constitution. That wasn't even close. The vote was 7-2.
On Wall Street today, the Dow gained almost 86 points. The Nasdaq was up about 24 points, and oil was down more than $2 at about 116. This is CBS News.
It's time to empty our schedules and fill up our flower pots. Time to unload our inboxes and load up our window boxes. It's time to grow something with Miracle-Gro Moisture Control, the potting mix that prevents under- or over-watering and lets you do just about anything except mess up. So let the creativity flow and the color and beauty grow. Miracle-Gro, it's grow time. This weekend, get to the Home Depot and get growing.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too. Only at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From April 24th through the 28th, save up to 25% on exceptional paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save only at Sherwin-Williams for painting, decorating, and great savings.
At Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What if the gardener's map is sliding northward because the globe's a half degree warmer? What then?
Ah, spring. You're out in the garden, digging up dirt, hoping for
spectacular plants without all the weeds.
On the back of your seed packets, you notice the map, the color-coded zones showing what can be planted in your region and when. USA Today says the maps are out of date. They're 18 years old. Global warming means some plants, like the southern magnolia, can grow north of the Mason-Dixon line. The nursery industry has opposed changing the maps. For one reason, warm weather plants might not survive a cold snap, and that could cost growers who offer money-back guarantees. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
The online world is increasingly coming to the surface. Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, is going to publish a hard copy in Germany in September. The content of this one volume encyclopedia will be the 50,000 most searched terms or subjects in Germany, and their Wikipedia. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Honey, have you seen the utility bill?
Uh-oh. What is it, honey?
Well, I'm not sure, but it's a lot lower than it was this time last year.
Oh, that's a big difference, is right.
It's time to see what going green can do with Eco Options products from the Home Depot. Through April 30th, get special deferred financing store-wide, including new Energy Star appliances, when you use your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
Why should buying a used car be any different than buying a new car? Shouldn't you be able to go to a dealer and feel completely confident about your purchase? Well, if it's a Honda-certified used car, you can. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. They'll even provide you with a Carfax vehicle history report. See? Confidence restored. And here's the best part. It may be used, but it's still a Honda. Honda-certified used cars.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
So just as we started the show a couple hours ago, and I mentioned we were going to talk about the light brown apple moth, this moth flew up right in front of my computer screen. And I managed a mid-air smackdown. We'll send it over to the lab and see if it's an apple moth. It was light brown, and now it's dead. Thanks for letting me carpool along with you on the ride home. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. And here along the California coast, there's been a lot of consternation over the last 6 months about responses to an infestation of the light brown apple moth. And today, a Santa Cruz County Superior Court judge suspended the aerial spraying and instructed the state of California to conduct environmental impact reports and other studies before resuming that aerial application of a pheromone-based product called Checkmate. Joining us now is somebody who knows more than I do, and we often turn to experts on this program, Steve Scholl Buchwald from the Pesticide Action Network. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
First of all, a couple of baseline questions. To what extent do you believe the light brown apple moth infestation represents a significant threat to California's agriculture and to the homes and gardens of average citizens?
Well, we don't really know the answer to that. Personally, I suspect it's not a significant threat to homes and gardens. It might be to, in some forms of agriculture, particularly those that are producing for shipment out of state, because there's a threat of quarantine, and it means when the quarantine's placed, you can't ship if any moths are turning up in your produce or your property.
Mm-hmm.
So it could that's probably its biggest threat. How much actual damage it's going to do is questionable. I wouldn't question that it'll do some damage, but whether it's catastrophic or even very large is an open question.
Yeah. So the first discovery was in Berkeley in 2006. That's not an agricultural community.
No, and frankly, I think the reason that happened is because the person who discovered it was a retired entomologist from UC Berkeley who happened to have worked in Australia years earlier, and he's one of the few people in the States who might have recognized this moth. If you look at pictures of them, various stages of the moth or various moths themselves can vary significantly in wing patterns and so on, and most people just see it as just one more bothersome tiny moth.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed the opinion of entomologists seems to be that it's probably been in California for many years, perhaps decades, but at low levels. The population grows slowly, and even though this entomologist knew that it was considered a significant pest in Australia, he figured, well, they show up, they go away, they don't establish themselves, and he actually took quite a while before he fully dissected it, talked to a friend at USDA at a meeting, that sort of thing, and they finally identified positively.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't something that panicked him when he found it.
And by last summer, the various traps said had collected about 5,000 moths, mostly
right.
in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties,
right.
And hovering closer to the coast than inland, is that correct?
Well, that seems to be where they are, and I don't think there's a great consensus on why it's there. Probably has to do with something about where they were established and hung on long enough to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been found in other parts of the state, south in Los Angeles and up further north as well. But, yes, Santa Cruz, Monterey County seem to be the epicenter for the trap moths.
And what about the agricultural-rich area of the Salinas Valley? Have there been any moths collected there?
I'm not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of some in going east in Alameda County, in just in little pockets. I haven't heard about anything out in the Central Valley yet.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's with most invasive species like this, it's probably just a matter of time.
And how hardy are they? What kind of heat can they withstand? Because the real farming areas that are inland get real hot in the summer, and I just don't know how hardy these critters are.
Yeah, I don't either. But they've been fairly widespread in Australia, which has pretty high ranges of climate.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand, where it's also established but at a more controlled level, really is it doesn't have those kinds of extreme heat situations, but Australia certainly does.
And what kind of methods have the authorities in Australia and New Zealand taken to try to control the spread of the light brown apple moth?
Well, I know most about New Zealand, and there they use a variety variety of management methods. They make no attempt to eradicate it. It's too widespread, but they use methods similar for control of other moth pests. They use some pheromones. They use trapping. Sometimes they'll use a more high-hazard pesticide temporarily to knock down a population. But it's nothing that's very it's not a dramatic thing for them. They take it as a matter of course. Mm-hmm. They do deal with quarantines. That's just it's there, and once they discovered it, it was too far to go to eradicate it.
Okay. Now, Steve, what is your take on this product Checkmate, which is described as a synthetic pheromone, and essentially, if it reaches the nests or whatever you call a home of a moth, that it prevents them from reproducing. So it essentially says this is the last generation, but it has to reach them where they live in their habitats at a sufficient strength, right?
Not really. Pheromones are essentially sexual attractants, perfumes, if you wish,
mm-hmm.
And they basically they're given off by the female moths or other insects or human beings, different pheromones for different species, and then the male hones in. That's how they find the female in the wild. So when you're using pheromones for pest management, what you're doing is simply putting enough into the atmosphere to confuse the moths. So sufficient numbers don't ever find their mates
mm-hmm.
and don't reproduce. So it's not killing them. You don't have to get it into a particular place. You distribute it in the area where they might be. And typically, they're going to be used as lures on twist ties, for example, or in traps, or sometimes they're going to be dispersed by spraying at the ground level. The unusual thing here is to spray them over very large areas and over urban populations,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, it's a theory that that will work. There's a lot of debate among entomologists about whether it's going to be effective at all. The consensus is that it certainly isn't going to eradicate the population, but there's a lot of debate about whether or not the concentration is high enough to really do the job. And this isn't about killing them, it's just confusing them,
mm-hmm.
or whether, in fact, when you spread it everywhere, they might be more attracted to the real pheromones coming from real moth females closer by. So I don't know. It's worth experimenting with at a low level, but our problem with it is that they're using this rather drastic approach of spraying it over these huge populations
yeah.
when, A, we don't know whether the pest is really much of a threat, and, B, we really don't know how these pesticide formulations are going to affect other species or people.
And in terms of humans, we've had large numbers of reports of adverse health reactions
right.
That's linked, at least in the minds of these citizens, to the spraying, yet there's a report that says, well, we couldn't really substantiate all this.
Right.
And it just strikes me that we shouldn't be experimenting on humans in this manner. You just pointed out that the extent of the threat is in question. And that the efficacy of this Checkmate product and its carriers, that's what I've heard described, that the formula that it's included in has elements that appear to be toxic to humans. And so given that, why are we rushing to continue the spraying over Pacific Grove, parts of Monterey and Santa Cruz counties, and to expand it into the Bay Area?
Right. Well, you hit the nail on the head. That's the question. Why do this? Why experiment? I frankly don't think that the Checkmate formulations that have been used or the new formulations that they're going to use, that they plan to use this summer, which are different. They've experimenting with four new formulations in New Zealand, and they are just starting to test them now to see how they react, whether any of these things are entirely safe. My suspicion is that they pose a very slight risk to people who are already immune compromised. They might be an asthma risk. There might be some slight irritation. This is not like heavy-duty pesticides. And frankly, when we heard that they were going to use pheromones at very first, we were relieved because their first chemical they turned to was chlorpyrifos, which is a highly toxic a chemical that shouldn't be used any place. It was banned for residential use back in 2000. They still use it in agriculture. But that's the first one they were reaching for. They thought better of that, thank goodness. I can't imagine that they would have sprayed that over large populations.
Well, and Steve, let me offer an extreme example. If this were the successor to the bubonic plague, and we were, you know, losing on a daily basis parts of our human population, a drastic effort like aerial spraying, you know, might be rational.
Well,
but it just strikes me here, and, you know, I survived the malathion spraying for the medfly in the late 70s in Palo Alto, which is not an agricultural community, and I still don't understand why they had to put me and my family at risk.
Right. Well, we raised the same question, and, you know, in the long run, the malathion didn't get rid of the medfly. What has controlled the medfly, they still deal with it. They still find them occasionally, not a major pest threat for agriculture because of all the efforts, but they're controlling it now with sterile moths. They're not using malathion sprays anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there is progress in terms of not only agronomic information, but the state's policies and how they do it. I think this is really kind of a ham-fisted response, and frankly, I don't think it has much to do with impacting California agriculture. I think it's about trade regulations.
All right. We're going to take a break and return. Our guest is Steve Scholl-Buchwald from the Pesticide Action Network. If you have a question or comment, now's the time to ask it. He'll be with us for another segment. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. There's a lot of good information on the website of the Pesticide Action Network, and that's PANA.org, P-A-N-N-A, PANA.org. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Don't spray me, dude. Don't tase me, bro.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. And he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers?
Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Checking traffic on KRXA and a brand new accident coming in for south of Gilroy. This is southbound 101 after Highway 25, a solo spin out, and it's in the center divide. CHP's on the way. CHP clearing an accident in Capitola off to the shoulder. Southbound 1 at Park Avenue. Three cars involved with minor injuries. Look for some heavy traffic as you approach the scene there. San Martin, Murphy Avenue at East Middle Avenue. Tractor and a car mixed it up. That's still clearing off to the side. They've got a tow truck on the way. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains. We have no stalls and no accidents. Highway 68 currently checking and stalling accident-free, and no problems to tell you about 101 through Salinas right now. This traffic report is brought to you by Advil Arthritis. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. Now, if you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're talking with Steve Scholl Buchwald from the Pesticide Action Network. If you just tuned in, a judge in Santa Cruz, California has stopped the aerial spraying to try to eradicate the light brown apple moth. So if you're driving past an orchard on the road to hell, just wave at the little moth there. 888-5 Peter B is our toll-free number if you'd like to join this conversation. That's 888-573-8372.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
Steve, we were talking in the first segment about the medfly spraying of malathion from the air back in 77, as I recall. And there was a larger-than-life Vietnam vet who was head of the Conservation Corps here in California at the time, a fellow named B.T. Collins. And he sat down in front of some TV cameras and drank a glass full of malathion.
I remember watching that.
To try to prove to us that the public doesn't have anything to worry about. Well, he passed away, and I don't think it was directly related to the malathion. He had some other medical issues. But is there any kind of effort by the Schwarzenegger administration to reassure the California public that they have the public health interest as the first priority as they attempt to deal with this pest?
Well, they're certainly claiming that. And in an editorial or an op-ed that Secretary of Agriculture Kawamura wrote last week, he stated that as a public official, it was among his highest priorities to protect the public health. He may sincerely believe that. And I can understand him supporting the use of the pheromone products as essentially safe and non-toxic. But to say any kind of synthetic chemical or any set of formulations that mixes in plastics and food preservatives and that sort of thing is safe for all people under all circumstances is a pretty risky thing to say.
Yeah.
But they claim they're doing their best, and they certainly have the state's Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment on the case. They're the ones that did the analysis of those reports of health impacts in Santa Cruz and Monterey.
But they dismissed the reports.
They wouldn't appreciate the word dismiss.
Okay.
I mean, I can understand that reaction.
That's my characterization.
Yeah, but what they did was what's a kind of standard risk assessment, which is to say we don't have evidence of a direct connection between what's in this spray and the health reports, because the health reports vary all over the map, all kinds of ailments, And yet at the same time, we can't prove that there weren't such impacts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's...
That kind of reminds me of testimony from tobacco executives.
Well, it is. I think, frankly, I think the people in that agency are doing their best to do their toxicology and to say the cautious scientific thing. Mm-hmm. That's a different thing than to say you ought to make a choice to spray people with something about which there's any suspicion. And frankly, I think people are properly alarmed about being sprayed if there's any chance of any kind of adverse impact,
mm-hmm.
and if there's no evidence that this is truly an emergency that requires this response.
Yeah. Let's talk to Robert in the Salinas Valley. Thanks for calling, Robert. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. And Anna, I appreciate the comments from Steve. Your approach is not what I hear often is a kind of a paranoid, really fearful approach. You seem to have a pretty good grasp of the situation and so forth. I would like to differ a little bit on as far as what could be the impact to our valley and what we do, though.
Go right ahead.
And that is, where we can't, when we can't export places our product, I mean, we're feeding the nation to a large part, when it comes to vegetables and fruits. And so when we can't export things, and that just diminishes what we can do and our lifeblood here in the valley. And what that eventually amounts to, I mean, if you can imagine, I mean, it's a little different now, but the development pressure here is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to, as long as farmers can continue to afford to farm and make money at it, then we'll do that. But unfortunately, with the development pressures, when the going gets tough, people turn to putting houses instead.
But Robert, you do understand that spraying in Pacific Grove in order to protect your farm in the Salinas Valley seems like a hazard to those in Pacific Grove without a real benefit.
Well, it's a benefit to our county, and it's a benefit to the land ultimately, because the answer to a collapse of this valley in terms of what we can export is
right.
Pavement.
All right. Steve and Robert, can you both hold? Because I got to take a break here that I can't stop, and I'd like to continue this conversation. And, Steve, I have a couple more callers for you if you can stay with us.
Sure, I'd love to talk with Robert.
Okay, great. Robert, you stay with us, too. We'll continue this conversation right after the break. My guest is Steve Scholl-Buchwald, Pesticide Action Network, their website, panna.org, PANNA.ORG. If you're on the line, stay there. If you want to get on the line, we'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Saturday, 9 p.m. on KRXA. UFO sightings are happening worldwide. We have the stories and answers, new information, new pieces of the puzzle. The Bob Oliver Show, The Quantum Leap, Saturday night, 9 p.m.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The Retirement Specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the Retirement Specialist.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
If you're going slow in the passing lane, please get out of the way. The Peter B. Collins Show, sponsored by Polly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's book, Bad Moon Rising. It describes Reverend Moon and his propaganda machinery at the Washington Times. Check out the video, including members of the Bush family. It's at thekingofamerica.com, and it's free. thekingofamerica.com. As we mentioned earlier today, a judge in Santa Cruz County, California, issued an order barring further aerial spraying to try to deal with the light brown apple moth infestation. And we continue with Steve Scholl-Buchwald, our guest from the Pesticide Action Network. Again, their website is panna.org. And we're talking with Robert, a farmer from the Salinas Valley. Robert, I'm glad you called, and thanks for holding through the break. We've got plenty of time now, so go ahead and tell us your perspective about the real impact of the light brown apple moth and what you see as the trade-offs here, particularly when it comes to this aerial spraying of the Checkmate pheromone product.
Well, I think Steve said it right, as far as the financial impact, it's a big unknown. In general, if there's an area that's quarantined, then you can't sell your product. It doesn't go overseas. It doesn't go it can't go to other states very often, and it can't even go to different areas of the state. So, the financial impact can be enormous.
And is there any quarantine so far?
No, there is not.
Okay.
There has been some. There were some orders on strawberries near the coast for a while, but I think that's been lifted.
Okay.
And there was some in specific counties up north, again, temporarily, but it's been lifted. And Mexico was asking for quarantines, but now they've revised the request, and that's in discussion. But, I'd like to say, from Robert's point, I mean, I basically agree with him, and I think there is a major concern here, and quarantines are certainly a huge problem for farmers, particularly those shipping out of state, but in some cases even in the state when it's county by county. And certainly our organization doesn't oppose an effective pest management program. If you want to roll this back and say, how do you do it right, the state should have been in a position to monitor for this pest much earlier. They claim that their funds have been cut back so far, thanks to the rebudgeting under Homeland Security, that they can't do the job they used to. And it's kind of ironic, but now up to $90 million is being invested by the federal government in this spray program, when a much lesser amount could have been used to monitor for pests. And at that level, you get a small infestation, you really can step on it, but you can't when it gets to be this large. So where we go is we're actually in league with farmers on this. We want an effective long-term control program for invasive pests, something that's safe. We think biocontrol programs, especially ground-level ones, are the way to go. And we think that the state needs to invest in that over years. Don't pretend, though, that you're going to eradicate the moth by aerial spraying of pheromones on the coast and keep it from moving further inland. I
mean, now, have they sprayed, Robert, on your croplands in the Salinas Valley?
No, they have not, and I'll go with what Steve was saying there. From what I've heard, they haven't found it down this area yet, Knock on wood.
All right, but if we're in prophylactic mode, we're in prevention mode here, wouldn't it make sense to use the ground-based delivery of the, you know, synthetic pheromone products to protect your crops as opposed to spraying it on homes in non-agricultural areas?
Yeah, the problem there is that, you know, if you're spraying locally, then your neighbor still has it. You know, it's one of those things that just has to be eradicated area-wide, otherwise a quarantine, if it does happen, is still going to stand. And I agree with, we don't want to do anything that's going to endanger, you know, residents by any means. There's got to be some study out there that compares, you know, what the danger of the chemical actually is, and then maybe even compare it to something like what's the exposure to this chemical in comparison to what we get from water bottles or something like that, you know, that's where I'm coming from.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call. Robert, Steve, do you have anything else for Robert before I move on?
No, I agree with him that I think this is not a particularly dangerous product, but it's the mode of application that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, ground level pheromone use we have no problem with, and we think if you've got $90 million, you could be doing an enormous amount of work on the ground, and recognize that there may be some localized quarantines. We hope that's not the case, but move ahead with the research and move ahead with sterile moth development, for example, because long-term, that's what's going to work.
All right. Robert, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for listening. And what are you growing, by the way?
Well, we grow all kinds of vegetables, and we also grow some blueberries.
Uh-huh.
So
great.
That's a risk.
All right. Thank you, sir. And now to Theodora in Santa Cruz. Thanks for your call, Theodora. You're on the air.
Hi. And I want to get excited, but at the same time, I realize this is just a temporary halt, and that people who've been working their butts off for the last several months, and I'm part of that team, but so are thousands of people.
Well, Theodora, your hunch is correct. The Farm Bureau of Monterey County has filed an appeal, and they hope to reverse this ruling in the near future.
And also, I'm reading I'm on the web and reading an article in the Bakersfield paper saying that the United States Department of Agriculture is already making sounds about taking over the program and coming in despite court rulings. So
now, Steve, let's talk about this a little bit, because jurisdiction does become an issue here. Certainly the counties attempt to control this, but pests don't have any regard for the county line. And then a state gets involved, and then when business or agricultural interests push hard enough, the feds might take over.
Exactly.
And that kind of preemption can leave local citizens with no recourse. We essentially just have to accept whatever the federal government decides to do.
Well, that's essentially the case in pesticide use generally. One of the benefits, if you can call it that, of the LBAM situation is that people who don't normally have to deal with spray drift and so on have become quite aware that the state, many years ago, preempted local control of pesticide use. And so the only thing that a county or city can actually do is prohibit the use of the pesticides on their own property. They can't tell neighbors not to use them. The state preempted that, and there was a move last year for federal preemption, in fact, to keep the states from regulating pesticides. That hasn't passed, thankfully, but USDA could come in here. That's true. If it gets too hot for CDFA, then USDA is likely to come in. And so our call, we're very supportive of what Sam Farr is doing and trying to get some answers in Washington, because ultimately that's where the pressure is coming from.
Sam Farr is a Democratic congressman on the Central Coast. Theodora, you want to follow up?
Well, one question, how is this going to affect the plans to spray San Francisco, since this was a local superior court? Is it going to have jurisdiction for the whole program, or are they, you know, is the whole program put on hold for now, or are they going to still?
That's a good question. Steve, what do you know?
I'm not a lawyer, but I would suspect that it would not take much for the city and county of San Francisco or for Alameda County or for all the other cities that have done this to bring suit and get a similar ruling until the environmental impact report is done. Of course, once they complete the environmental impact report, then you're back to square one. It does really put them to the test, though, that they're saying it would take them something like a year to complete this, and they're going to spray anyway. And we think it's a great ruling from that standpoint. But like Theodora, we think it's a very temporary thing.
And doesn't the environmental impact report, I mean, partly what they did by declaring an emergency is they didn't have to answer certain questions or deal with certain things. And now with the EIR that they have to do that, they do have to actually come up with more than just PR statements.
Right. That's right.
So there is some hope that maybe the EIR wouldn't be acceptable because the science really isn't there to support this process?
Unfortunately, that's the problem with risk assessment as it's practiced, that you don't have a slam dunk case in any situation. And so you're dealing with relative risks, and I would guess that when the environmental impact report comes up, it's not going to be a closed case either way, and there still have to be a judgment made. The beauty of the environmental impact report is that at least it makes you ask the largest questions and avoid gross errors before you go ahead. And, of course, they did get around that by declaring an emergency. But I'm not at all confident that once an environmental impact report is completed that we would necessarily know all we need to know and feel comfortable with the spraying. And as I said, our position is the spraying is not going to work. It's an overreaction. It's an experiment on people. And even if it's the slightest bit hazardous, they shouldn't be doing it.
And one more question. Did CEQA come into play in this ruling, or was it specifically about the need for the EIR report?
I don't know. I think under CEQA, the EIR, the environmental impact report, is required. That's the CEQA rule they broke by declaring emergency.
Oh, okay.
And can you decode that for us who don't speak CEQA?
The California Environmental Quality Act, short CEQA, and among things that CEQA requires is environmental impact reports before you do something like aerial spraying.
I see.
It covers a range of environmental hazards.
All right, Theodora, thank you.
The last thing, can I say one more thing?
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, just basically let's celebrate the temporary delay, but let's keep busy, everybody out there. Keep concerned. Keep on it. Do not stop working for a minute.
And stay in touch with me, too, Theodora. Peter at peterbcollins.com, okay?
Love you. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Tom in Santa Cruz, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Peter B. And I've forgotten your guest name, but...
Steve.
Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
The one thing that I come to understand is that there's some very shady information about why this was declared an emergency, and that would be the only reason for a quarantine that could hurt any farmers economically.
Shady in the sense that it may not have to do with real economic damage?
Well, shady in the sense that this pest isn't really a pest anyway, and that the only reason that it was declared an emergency was because of how it is classified as a Class 1 pest, and there was very much information lacking as to why it was classified as a Class 1 pest.
Yeah. Well, I have the same question, and I think that, again, that's the kind of question Sam Farr has placed to USDA. Why was this classification placed on the light brown apple moth in the first place? It is considered a pest in places where it's well-established. In Australia, it's been in New Zealand for a century, and it does some damage, but it's typically cosmetic damage. I've seen photos in Australia, for instance, of an orange that's been damaged by light brown apple moth, and you see a slight brown ring around the top of the orange just where it attaches to the stem. And so you could say, well, it's not valuable as much, and they may decrease productivity to some extent. I think it depends heavily on which crop, under what circumstances. It's not the kind of thing where moths come through the orchard and all of a sudden there's no fruit left. These are pretty minor things. That's not to say that it doesn't do some damage, though.
Well, and you've explained, and so did our friend the farmer, the economic impact. Even if the damage to the crops is not that serious, it can lead to quarantines and market blockages.
You can't sell your crop.
Yeah, so that impact is understood, but then we get into a balancing act between human health and the economic viability of a certain sector of the market.
Well, and take it a step further, you get into the arguments about trade quarantines, which have to do with trade agreements. And I think that behind this, it's quite plausible that USDA is concerned about tit-for-tat quarantines with other countries and wants to be seen as standing firm in its own country because it wants to turn back imports from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really not specifically about this moth. It's just a case in point, and they were perhaps running scared. There's all kinds of conspiracy theories about it, but I think it's overly concerned about those trade relationships and having gotten themselves into a box in the way they treat other countries' shipments.
Tom, thanks a lot for your call today. And Steve Scholl-Buchwald, thank you for the extended time you've given us and the expertise that you bring to these questions. I've certainly learned a lot, and I appreciate your contribution. Again, I want to reference your website of the Pesticide Action Network, and that's PANA, P-A-N-N-A. .org. We've been talking with Steve Scholl-Buchwald. A final comment, Steve?
I want to thank you for the opportunity and for covering the issue.
All right. We'll talk to you again. Thank you, sir. We take a break and return. You got a comment? Bring it on now. Lines are open at 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA and 101 seems to be the hot spot right now. Salinas, northbound 101 before Baranda Road. Pieces of wood debris in the two left-hand lanes. Watch out there. Also, Salinas, northbound 101 after Main Street. Big rig and a pickup truck mixed it up there, both off to the side. Look for some heavy traffic as you approach the scene. For Prunedale, northbound 101 before Dunbarton Road, a box truck with its engine on fire. That's off to the shoulder. Fire department is on the way. And up in Felton, San Lorenzo Avenue at Jackson Way, a couple of horses reportedly walking around the lanes. Now, earlier crash northbound 101 before Highway 25 south of Gilroy. Solo spin out center divide. It looks like that's been cleared out by the CHP. And this is brought to you by Act Restoring Mouthwash. Act Restoring Mouthwash is a three-act mouthwash. Act 1 kills germs. Act 2 restores minerals to soft spots. And Act 3 strengthens tooth enamel up to 2 times harder. Be sure to get Act Restoring Mouthwash. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hello, this is
Salazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show, rocking down the highway with you. Shout out to our weekend listeners in Portland, Oregon on KPOJ 620. Seattle, Washington, AM 1090, KPTK. It's great to have you along for the ride. Check in by email, peter@peterbcollins.com. In a moment, we'll get the latest news that never makes it into the corporate media from R.J. Schulman at the Post-Times-Sun-Dispatch. But Emily's on the line from Santa Cruz. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I know you hate me saying that. And
yeah, I do.
I just said it, but there I did. I wanted to say a couple of things about the light brown apple moth situation. I've been one of the local activists working to stop the absurd plan of the state, both the aerial spraying and the ground spraying and the whole mess of it, and I was in the courtroom this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I wanted to say is this is really a people's victory. A lot of us went to our city council and our board of supervisors last fall and demanded that they file suit, and they did, and we won. And this wouldn't have happened without a lot of activism on the ground. And we don't often get a victory. We've got one today. It's not a complete victory. It may not be a permanent victory, but it's an important one. And I really want to encourage people to get involved in working on this to expand the victory to other counties and make it a permanent one.
Well, as a resident of counties north of you, I want to say that I'd like to learn from your experience, and I would like to see a concerted effort. San Francisco's already sent, they've passed a resolution, opposing the aerial spraying, but as we heard, this all could be preempted if they move it up to the federal level. So this is a very interesting little game of strategery to continue to fight for the rights of individuals to protect themselves from this kind of aerial spraying while avoiding having this elevated to the federal level, where we know the Bush administration would be happy to spray California with more than just checkmate.
Yep, I think that's true. And I think one of the things we need to make sure that we're talking about in this issue is that it's that while aerial spraying has gotten the most attention, the ground spraying program is also really dangerous. And what that consists of is a chemical concoction that includes that synthetic pheromone that they keep trying to tell us is safe, mixed with permethrins and squirted in sticky goo onto telephone poles and trees on public and private property at a rate of 3,000 or more per square mile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something we want to have happen either. So
yeah.
There's still considerable work to do when we're done celebrating. And people who want to find out more can go to California Alliance to Stop the Spray's website, which is CASSonline.org.
All right, Emily, thanks for your activism. Thanks for that report.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It's time for our weekly update from the Post Times Sun Dispatch on the web at ptsd1.blogspot.com. And the guy who owns the ink and the press is there joins us now, R.J. Schulman, the intrepid reporter. Hello, R.J.
Hey, Peter B., how are you doing this week?
Well, we're fighting apple moths and all kinds of things, but it's always good to talk with you. I see shocking news here at the site today that the Bush family wedding plans have been changed and Jenna has a new fiancé?
That's correct. I mean, they just announced several months ago that she was going to marry Henry Hagar, who is the son of a former Virginia lieutenant governor. But that's all changed. Apparently, she's now going to marry 58-year-old Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia.
That's Bandar Bush. Now, isn't that incest? I thought he was already a member of the family.
Well, maybe that's true. You know, I suppose if we look back far enough, we might find that they're all from West Virginia, but that's another story.
And you quote the president, when the prince came to me and told me he wanted to marry Jenna, I said, done deal, just like on Deal or No Deal, that show I cameo appeared on. And when asked about this sudden change of engagement from Hagar, a man that Bush had called Jenna's soulmate, Bush said, well, the prince is more soulmatey than Henry, who was promised a job with with Blackwater in Iraq. That'll take care of Henry.
That is correct. I don't know what is so funny about the story. I mean, news is news. But that's not the only part of this story. Apparently, Janet's twin sister announced her engagement to General Zhu Shengao, who's a top Chinese general.
Wow. Well, this this kind of gives an international spread to the next generation of the Bush family.
I guess so. I mean, it's... one of the senior researchers at the Rand Institute, a man by the name of Harold Winokur, said that it's going to work out very well for the U.S. because after these marriages, what's going to happen is Saudi Arabia is not going to call in the U.S. debt, and China will hold off on their long-range missiles, the ones that are aimed at U.S. cities.
Yeah, but is Barbara taking this very well?
Barbara, the president's mother, says that... it's going to be a good thing because she said, we got a direct quote, my granddaughters were headed for disastrous marriages to weak individuals. So these sudden marriages should work out well for them.
Wow. Okay. Next up, we talked about this subject earlier today, RJ, about the American flag lapel pin and what it really means. And you report on a new study by Fox News.
Yeah, they did a very extensive study of radio talk show hosts, and I hope they included you, Peter B., on that.
Not so far.
And found out that they didn't?
No, not so far.
Oh, okay. Anyway, they found out that from this evidence that wearing flag lapel pins actually encourages U.S. enemies.
Holy cow. And let's see, Rush Limbaugh is quoted here as saying, America's not wearing, just how many people were not wearing their flag lapel pins when 9/11 hit? They think this is some kind of antidote or... I don't know. I don't quite get it. RJ, I'm out of time here, but I want to direct people to your website where they can read this story for themselves. PTSD1.blogspot.com. That's RJ Shulman. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you, Peter B. Have a great week.
All right, thank you. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to...
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family,
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say,
and puts on Washington's worst dinner parties.
The Christians is centered on Satan.
The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Ling. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. North Korea, according to evidence released by the Bush administration today, allegedly helped Syria build a nuclear weapons reactor. CBS's David Martin.
Analysts say it looks exactly like the reactor North Korea used to produce plutonium for nuclear weapons.
Only North Korea has built this type of reactor in the past 35 years.
A videotape produced and narrated by U.S. intelligence lays out the case with more photos of the building under construction.
This photograph shows the top of the reactor vessel in the reactor hall.
Satellite photos showed construction was all but complete in August 2007. Before it could be fueled and begin operation, the Israelis bombed it. Subsequent photos show the Syrians covered the holes with tarps to hide what was inside, finished the job of blowing up the reactor vessel, and then bulldozed it.
Syria's ambassador denies it all, claims it's lies. Reaction from Democratic leaders, California Senator Dianne Feinstein.
I'm very concerned about the timing of this. Reportedly, Israel is interested in negotiating with Syria now for a peace agreement. I very much want that to happen. I think it's to everybody's best interest and the world's best interest that it happens. This may well set it back.
She also said she wants North Korea to feel unconstrained at nuclear disarmament talks. Wounded vets can still ride.
Welcome to Soldier Ride.
The air horn didn't perform very well, but Mr. Bush was honoring wounded warriors who did as he launched their three-day bike ride from the White House to the Lighthouse in Annapolis, Maryland.
This has got to be one of the most inspiring athletic events in our nation's history.
Before hitting the road, the cyclists did a lap around the South Lawn, some of them using special bikes that let them pedal with their hands because they lost their legs in combat. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
It was a Red Sox fan, of course, who paid $175,100 for the tattered David Ortiz jersey that a construction worker had buried in the foundation of the new Yankee Stadium.
Just think it was a great win-win. We get to make this great donation to